Hello and welcome to the Adeptus Terra podcast, episode 16. I'm Matt.
And I'm Sam.
And this is the night I saw my mummy kissing the Emperor.
That wasn't the Emperor, that was me.
Oh, no. Oh. Oh, my dreams are shattered.
That's fine. One day you'll meet the Emperor.
But yeah, this is our Christmas episode. This is our December recording. It's crazy early in December for us.
Start the 5th.
Yeah, the 5th. Brilliant. But yeah, we've had to record early, but it'll come out normal time for you guys. So it should be Christmas pretty much now, I think.
25th?
Yeah, I think it comes out on the 24th.
No, because that's a... No, Thursday, yeah.
Yeah.
So Merry Christmas Eve. Emperor-mas.
Yeah, so this is your early Christmas present from the Adeptus Terra podcast, this episode.
I expect cash returns for my...
Donations can be... No, we don't do that.
We don't do donations.
But yeah, it looks like it's going to be a good show. Got some good topics to talk about. And let's shoot into our news from Terra.
What news
comes from Terra, Sam?
Well... What have I been doing in the last 2 weeks?
Yeah.
Since we last recorded.
Yeah. Keep that in mind, people.
Purchases. So, I actually purchased my own Christmas present from my loving fiance.
And it's totally awesome.
It's the Mechanicum Red Book.
Yay! 30K.
So...
Commitment.
Some people may know we're doing the 30K Escalation League. I may or may not have chosen to do a night list.
Yeah, night and Mechanicum.
Oh, it's going to be good.
It's going to be interesting.
So I bought myself my present because Kelly didn't know what to get me. So yeah. I was just like, here's what I want.
And awesome.
Bought it. So I wrote a little gift message to myself.
from Forge World,
which was, May your bolt of fire always be true or something along those lines, which came with a nice little piece of card.
Which is complete rubbish because you won't have any bolters in your army.
There'll be bullets.
No, there won't. Yeah, there'll be bullets. There won't be any bolters.
No, there's
lightning guns and arc reactors and iron men walking everywhere and... Well, I don't know.
All right, then.
It's all craziness to me.
It's fine. We'll go through it. And I'll
when
try
you, when you
sense.
Sent my list, when you sent me your list that you kind of have started working on, I was like... What does what now? It's all a bit mental for my simple Space Marine mind.
So I bought that. That's great.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Took a nice little wee trip to Dark Sphere. I bought some green paint because I've been working quite heavily on my Terminators.
Oh, I thought you were going to say orcs then.
No.
Oh, no.
Green layer paint.
When's that? Come on.
When are orcs? This will be used for orcs. It's highlights. So
okay.
It will be used for okay. orcs. Okay. So that's basically for the lenses on the eyes and lenses on tanks and stuff. And I've had the same one that I've always used since I started.
And it's goop.
No, it's fine. It's just all stuck in the lid. There's nothing in the actual pot
okay.
anymore.
Yeah,
so
that
I
happens.
Have to sort of dip and caress it gently with water and then it'll be fine. But what else did I buy? I also bought some Chaos Black spray.
Yes. You've been putting to good use today?
Some Abaddon Black base paint.
Yeah, always handy.
Always handy because that's how I do my tracks. I paint them black and dry brush grey.
So oh, yes. Yeah,
I
yeah.
needed it for my Barl Pred I've been working on. And I also bought a new base coat brush, the GW one.
Okay, do you know what? I haven't actually seen the Games Workshop brushes since they redid them. I think it's mainly a kind of new aesthetic look rather than new brushes.
The brushes are fantastic.
Yeah, but are they any different, really?
I've used it.
Do they have new brushes? Have they got like the alternative of like the Psycho brush from Army Painter? Or,
yes.
Or is Fine Detail the lowest they'd still go?
No, they have like a Psycho, I think. I only looked at the big brushes.
Yeah, I should probably have a look.
I wanted one for the tracks. And this actually, it felt a lot easier painting the tracks on a Barl Pred than using my other brushes. So
that's interesting.
Maybe it will work out.
Yeah, I really love the Army Painter brushes.
Yeah.
Like the Psycho, the Insane Detail.
Yeah.
Regiment and small dry brush are like the four that I really use, and I just find them better. They last longer than the Games Workshop brushes, and
maybe we'll see how long this one lasts.
Yeah, maybe I should pick up some of the new Games Workshop ones and do a bit of a, don't know, buy a new Army Painter one and a new Games Workshop one and see what one I prefer and what one lasts longer and do a bit of a test.
Bit of a product test.
Bit of then. Research.
Bit of
and then
research.
I can report back to you guys.
And then it's okay because you can just claim it
all back.
That's
how much I care.
You can just claim it all back from the podcast.
Yeah, on expenses, man.
On expenses.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I'll sign off.
So when are we going to Adepticon on expenses?
Next year.
No, not happening.
I will maybe not go.
Yeah.
Maybe
2018 or something.
It'd be a bit weird. Kay, would you mind if I go on holiday with Matt? You can't come.
Oh, we're fully going to do it. No, they can come. They can come.
Oh, there'd be so much of a drag. And you've got a child.
They
can
do whatever they like.
You've basically got an anchor.
They can go to Disneyland.
Do you know where Adepticon is?
No, in America. There's got to be a Disneyland somewhere.
Oh, my God. Isn't it? Hang on. It's on the same coast?
I have no idea where Adepticon is.
Okay, so
that's as far as I know.
Anyone who knows where Adepticon is, please message us on the Facebook. Yeah. Educate Matt on his such poor knowledge of where it is in America.
Everything's America. Like the states, I get is a really big deal for those guys, and I get that. But for me, it's all just America. I don't know if that. Hopefully, that doesn't offend anyone. I do not mean to offend. I love America.
It's just simple. It's fine. I also got Matt's Christmas present as well, which are really awesome. So, if Matt could leave the room, I will tell everyone, the listeners, what the present is.
Oh, do you really want me to get up?
Yeah.
Oh.
There you go.
Man.
Come on. Hurry up.
Oh, I'm going to be out of breath when I come back. getting up. Yeah.
Three steps
out of the room and shutting the door. I'm going to be dead.
Okay, hurry up.
I'm taking my monster.
Close the door. Cool, so everyone out there in listener land, Matt is now running around the dance studio that's outside of the recording studio. I bought Matt the... we're talking last episode about scenery, and he was talking about his Tyranids that he wanted scenery for those. So I bought him some Tyranid scenery, the hard foam that we got, so that's pretty cool. And I'm sure he'll tell you next episode. I'll wave him back in. He's coming back. He's wobbling. The door is shaking. He's coughing. Get in, hurry up. Right, what purchases have you done?
I could have stayed out the room for my own purchases.
So none then.
So yeah, I don't have any purchases. I am actually out flipping it. Anyway.
You're shit out of breath.
Yeah, I think it's because I kind of was mucking about out there so I couldn't hear you.
Right.
So I was stamping around. But anyway.
Purchases.
Yeah, so I haven't got any purchases. Christmas is coming. Sam has just shared whatever my present is, which is awesome. Exciting. And there's a few bits that I need that I put on my list to Jenny that she might get me. So I didn't really want to buy any of that stuff. And then everything else is kind of in that too expensive range at the moment because Christmas is coming. So like a gaming table, display cabinets, all that kind of stuff. So yeah, I didn't buy anything.
Maybe you should build your gaming table.
I have thought about it. There's a lot of wood here. For those that don't know, I run a youth centre and skate park, so there's a lot of spare wood lying around, so I could probably knock something up. But I don't know.
A lot of work.
Yeah. I think for the amount of time and cost of buying the wood, even though it'd be quite cheap, I'd want to give something back for taking it. Mm. Would probably add up to a table anyway.
It's not going to cost you 200 quid.
In hours, it probably will. If I was paying myself easily.
Yeah, but you're not worth 200 quid an hour.
Well, it won't take an hour to build a table.
You're like, what, $3.95 an hour?
Yeah.
It's not going to take you that long to build it.
I don't know. Well, in between work and home and baby child and everything else.
Call it like, the ultimate, I don't know, gift to yourself.
I don't know. Maybe if I get to January and it doesn't look like it's going to happen soon, then I might go down that route, but at the moment I think I'd rather just buy one. But I am lazy, which you guys probably know by now. But yeah, I have nothing in my purchases, so Shall we move on to building?
I don't really have anything building other than I've been looking at orcs, kind of like the conversions for the bikes. They're kind of the next thing will be done.
Bikes, sorry, you mean the buggies?
Yeah, the next thing will be done will be the buggy conversions. I'm sort of just planning that. I haven't really got anything else that I need to build at the moment because I'm going back through my Blood Angels. So
yeah.
More on that in painting.
Yeah, well, I mean, I gave you the tracks from the latest Torox that I've just built because looking at using those tracks to make tracked buggies, and it'll be really cool to kind of... I love orc conversions.
Yeah.
So yeah, that'd be cool. I must need to give you the other two that I've got. And then the fourth one from... Do you have four buggies? I think it's four.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'll have fourth set of tracks from the one I hopefully will either get for Christmas or probably purchase myself in January. That's my plan. Like with the stuff that I was on my list, it's all kind of affordable. So I can pick that up in January if I need to. But yeah, we'll see. Christmas is coming. It's an exciting time.
Okay then. So let's move swiftly on to painting.
Well, hang on. My building.
Oh, yeah, you did something.
So I have built two Torox Primes.
Yes, you finished the last one off in the last couple of minutes.
Yeah, yeah, like literally maybe 20 minutes before we recorded. Right. We did have dinner before we recorded, so just before that.
Candlelight.
It was, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
We're Lady in the Tramp moment. Matt, of course, yeah, is yeah. Tramp, so...
I'm fine with that. I look more like a tramp with my scruffy beard at the moment.
Yeah.
I need to trim it up. But at least I can grow hair on my face.
On my face?
Yeah, whatever. Takes like half a year.
It's fine.
And then the wind blows and it comes off.
It's okay.
Damn it, why are you not rising to this?
I don't mind.
Because
when you're old...
You're no fun.
It's fine. At least my beard's not going grey.
Well, whatever. It's a beard.
It looks like you've got... Oh, actually, that's not appropriate for radio.
Yeah, shush. Right, anyway, yeah, so I built two Torox Primes with the conversion kits, so the wheeled versions, basically. I went with extra-wide wheels.
For an extra-wide load.
Yep, because I'm going to ride them. No.
You're going to be like skates.
You need like 20.
That'd be so good.
No, it wouldn't.
Do you have faith in your gluing?
Huh?
Do you not have faith in your gluing? We could have them as skates. No. Do you reckon you could stand on top of the model?
No.
I think it'd be fine.
No. Doesn't matter how much glue. No, go away. but yeah, so they're wheeled versions, a bit more like Humvees, look really cool. Built two with the wider wheels with the Gatling cannons for my troops. And my command squad have got the battle cannon on it with slightly thinner wheels. That was just because I actually ended up ordering wide wheels by mistake. But they actually look as good, if not a little bit better. So I think the last one that I'll get for my last troop squad will have the wide wheels as well. So, yeah, it's exciting. I had fun building them. They're quite fun kits, quite easy, go together quite quickly. That's about it, really.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Painting.
Painting. There is nothing in my painting, sadly.
Did you do anything this month?
No, hey, my hobby commitments for last month, last episode, were to read at least 5 pages, which you sent me for the Mechanicum. I've read 6.
Right, okay.
Just to prove a point.
Today.
Yeah, like 20 minutes ago as well. I wanted to build the two Torox Primes, which I did. The other one was to paint or get paint on 5 Scions. I have failed at that, which is a shame. I was hoping to get them out. There was one night where I probably could have at least got the base coat on them, like the base silver, but I failed in laziness, which is, I look back and think, oh, that was a bit stupid, but there's always more time to paint, so I'm not going to let that, you know, knock me down too much.
Yeah.
And the last hobby commitment I had was play 2 games, which I would have had, but I had to cancel one for work.
Oh.
So I ended up, I've got 1 game to talk about with you guys, which is very similar to Sam's game last month. But anyway, for those that remember, you might remember the result that Sam got his ass handed to him. I can say ass, can't I?
You say ass.
Good. Yeah, similar result and the same player. So anyway, we'll get to that in games. But painting wise, no, not a thing for me.
I painted loads in the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, you have actually been really, I don't know what the word is.
Productive.
Yeah.
I got 5 Terminators from base coat to being finished, with basing, all the finer details, that kind of stuff. So they're done.
They're not finished if they're not based.
They are
just
based.
Putting that one out there.
Yeah, absolutely. So they're based with a crackling paint.
Yeah, basing is for closers.
Basing is for closers. Is indeed. So what else? I got 5 more Terminators that I'd already painted like long, long ago when I first started Blade Angels. Touched them up, got them excited, and finished them off.
Got them excited?
And finished them off.
Did you genuinely just say that? Oh, man. Move along quickly.
So they're all finished. They were done as before I came down here, which was slightly late. So I finished off the crackling paint and the ring around the edge.
Yep. That's what, 10
Terminators done
this
month?
10 Terminators.
And then 5 more Terminators are now base coated black to be my Death Company Terminators.
Yeah, that's going to be a really cool theme. I don't see them very often.
Nope.
Like, and I guess, would they have Death Company Terminators? Because technically, yes.
Yeah,
but would they really.
A waste of Terminator.
Exactly,
like,
that's what.
Terminator,
would they just take them out of it?
I don't know. Would. I don't know.
Because I'm assuming when
I've never seen a story with a Death Company Terminator. The reason I'm putting Death Company Terminator is to make it a bit more of a rounded list.
Yeah, and just, you know, for aesthetic, it'll look really cool.
Yeah.
They'll stand out, and, you know, they're still in Blood Angel colours. It's not like you're going to go, I'm going to paint them green.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you've got a reason behind that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think they'll look really cool.
And as I have, like, 9 troop choices.
Are they combat guys? Are they assault marines? assault Terminators?
No, chain fists.
Okay.
Basically, yeah. They're my tank hunter squad.
Yeah, fair enough. Chain fists and power fists. Death Company Terminators running around just trying to cut up big ass tanks and monstrous creatures. Fits the bill pretty good.
Running with a couple of dreadnoughts, fine.
They're like a squad of lone wolves. Lone wolves are set to just go and hunt down the biggest thing on the board and kill it.
Yeah. But obviously, they're not from Twilight, but okay. Just talking about werewolves from Twilight.
Oh, right. Yeah. What about your vampire?
Team Edward, it's fine.
Yeah, I'll win.
No, Edward wins.
Yeah, no, Jacob.
No. Hang on, which one's which? Jacob's a wolf.
Yeah, he wins.
No, he doesn't.
Yeah, he does.
No, he doesn't.
He does.
They're all on Channel 4. We should go and watch them. No. And then we can resolve this argument.
I am not putting myself through that.
Then admit I win.
No.
Anyway, I win.
No.
So I finished the... They're all base coated, black, so then I'll work on them in the next couple of weeks.
So, half painted.
Basically half painted for Def Comedy. I'll base them, they'll be fine. And I finished a bar of bread as well.
Yeah,
that
man.
Was, again, base coated red, so that's gone from there to being finished, all detailed.
That's awesome. Is it all kind of weathered?
Weathered
and...
down, matches my board.
That's really cool, man.
It will be glorious.
Yeah, that's great.
But that's all the painting I've done. Not much, really.
That's pretty good in 2 weeks, man. 10 Terminators, a Barb Pred, and undercoated another 5.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
It's more than I've done in the last, like, month.
Yeah. I've been really... I don't know. Last month, I got 5 Scions done, which I was really happy about from start to finish.
Yeah.
I'm being quite bold with my hobby commitment for next year.
Okay.
Which is weird to say.
Are we doing hobby commitments for next year?
Let's
do one for the next month.
Yeah.
And then let's do
in
hobby
January. Yeah.
For
next year.
The year. We're doing it in January this year.
What
we should do it this year.
This episode.
Yeah. We should do it for this episode.
What? Our yearly?
A yearly.
No, next episode.
Why?
Because that'll be January. The start of the year.
Okay.
No. I've already written my hobby commitments for the January episode.
Right,
For episode 17. So.
Okay.
We'll keep that.
All right, then.
And then episode 17, we will set some yearly goals for the podcast as well as ourselves.
And if Matt doesn't meet his hobby goals...
We'll come up with some forfeits.
He will donate his Space Wolves to charity.
Oh.
Of my choosing.
They're not painted very well.
Probably
they wouldn't, probably wouldn't put in that much money.
Well, they're sprue grey, so they're halfway there. Once you base them, you can finish them.
Yeah. Running joke there for those that have been listening all the way from the beginning. Constant sprue grey treatment.
Carry on. Hobby commitment. Not hobby commitments. Your painting.
My painting, I told you. Nothing.
Hobby commitments, go.
It is. So my hobby commitments, to play at least 2 games.
Okay.
Which sounds not a lot, but recently I've been struggling to get 1 game in a month, even when it was a month gap. I know this has only been 2 weeks, but I just want to get more games in, play a couple, maybe different armies, so we can report back a bit differently to these guys. To you guys that are listening, I just want to get more games in. I really enjoy the gaming side of the hobby and feel like I'm missing out on it a bit more. So,
well, we've got our
game. We'll probably have like 4 between now, because it's going to be 6 or 7 weeks between recordings for us anyway. We'll probably get a lot more than that, but I'm guaranteed to play 2. I'm going to make that happen, even if everything goes really rubbish. I'm gonna make sure I get 2 in,
because
I want to report that back.
Cool.
So that's that. Then to clear out my hobby space, so currently it's full
garage.
Of boxes.
Okay.
So it's full of my converted garage at home is full of boxes, and not just full of Warhammer, but boxes for the loft and things like that. We've cleared it out for the house because we moved in a couple of months ago, but just tons of stuff for the loft, so I'm gonna get that all out, even if that goes in our spare room. So I'm ready to kind of go through it all and get it set up for being my 40K space.
Yep.
So, that's really exciting. Going to get that done. Finish Mechanicum.
Cool.
The book, because I've read 5-6 pages.
360 pages?
I can do that. I can do that in 6 weeks, I think.
I challenge ye.
That's
on
there.
It's such a good book.
It's been
alright
so far.
Now I'm doing a night list, I have much more of an appreciation for it.
Yeah.
Like, it's so good!
So I finished that book and then paint 10 Scions.
Only 10?
So 2 games, sort out my hobby space. I've only got 10 left to paint.
Okay.
So that would be all of my Scions painted.
Cool.
I haven't included my Torox Primes in that, which I'm hoping to get done. I'd like to get past these. These are like the minimum that I am definitely going to achieve.
Yep.
And I'm saying that now. but everything after that will be a plus that I'll be able to share.
Cool.
So yeah, so that's my hobby commitments.
Mine are to lock down my 30k list. I kind of want to get it sorted. Now I've got the red book on the way, and I think it'd be a lot easier. And Chris has very kindly lent me Conquest. There we go, I've put the name of it.
Yeah,
very
kindly.
Kindly lent me Conquest, so I can kind of work out for the kinks. Like, I think I know how it all works anyway, but it's obviously good to have the book in hand.
Oh yeah.
So I'm going to get that locked down. I'm, of course, going to paint more Blood Angels. I've got like 6,000 points to get through.
Yeah.
So I need to get them. I'm going to get them onto Kanban.
Is some of that just to rebase?
Some of it will be, it's a mix between repainting, rebasing, complete overhaul, and then touch-ups.
Okay.
So a lot of my, like, Assault Marines will just require touch-ups and rebasing. But there's, like, some my attack squads, which need a complete redo.
Yeah, because they were very early painted.
Basically, the earlier, the more required.
Yeah.
So my scouts, I won't touch my scouts. My scouts are fine.
Yeah. Yeah, they're painting really well.
So, yeah, so that's be interesting to do. So that'll be just to continue. I want to get everything onto Kanban.
Yeah, I need to start using that more.
Yeah, if we can use the Adeptus Terra one.
Yeah,
I can set it up and basically do a list at a time.
Yeah, so we've set up a Kanban board with our email account. So we can both see what each other's up to and encourage each other and challenge each other, hold each other accountable so that we reach our hobby commitments and we reach what we want to achieve so that we can share it on the show. So that'll be really cool to get that up and running for the next year. I've got to delete like all the orcs off it because the last time I set it up, I set up all for my orcs and they're done. So they can all come off and cool. I can set up my slimes.
No, they can't come off. They've just got to move over to the done column.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know, because eventually it just gets silly.
Maybe we should do one for the start of next year, and at the end of next year, we can kind of go over what we've finished. Like how much
should be everything, but that'd be really cool.
We'll do that, and then we can keep it in. Obviously, the done column will be huge, but, well, for me, maybe not for you.
Well, but if it's one between both of us, I'll feel okay.
I painted one Space Wolf.
Yeah, but Sam held me up for that one, so that's great.
Sam has 30 tax squads finished.
Yeah. It'll be really interesting to see, actually.
Yeah. So, what else? I'm going to, now I've got those tracks, I'm going to start working on some converting for the tester buggy, just to see kind of what I can do and what's out there and sort of go from there. Other than that, I'm not going to pledge to do any games. I know I'll get a few games in, but I'm not really that worried at the moment.
That's okay.
Kind of want to get some lists signed out and get some stuff finished.
Yeah, that's interesting. I feel that I really want to get those games in.
Yeah,
I really want to get those games in. One, just for my own enjoyment, but two, I just feel like we're lacking in that area at the moment for the show. I want to get those games so we can share them, get our game section even better than it is, which isn't that hard, to be honest.
Yeah.
And really look at how to expand and improve that section of the podcast. So, I that's what's driving me for that. But, yeah, it's cool that you're not like that. Otherwise, we'd both be trying to work towards the same thing.
If you want to paint, I want to get my blood. You know what I actually want to do is get my Blood Angels finished.
Yeah.
And then once that they're done, it'll be full on 30k.
Yeah, that's going to be really cool. That'll definitely be in our next year's what we hope hobby for commitment. For our hobby commitment.
I reckon I could actually theoretically do my 30k list in a year.
I could easily
it's just
buy
money.
It.
It's just money.
It's the time of getting it all done and everything else. To be honest, looking at it, and with the Betrayal of Kalth box now, a year and a half, maybe. It's not as long as I thought it might have been.
Well, we were given year per 1,000 points, weren't we?
Yeah, that's what we said. So that's 3 years. And I just think we could half that. You know, it comes down to the other people involved in the league, but not the league. That's something completely different.
That's what I meant. Right, let's go on to Risk, and then we'll carry on with the 30K chat.
Okay, all right.
So, go on. What's on Risk?
I've actually finished my Night Lords list for 30K. So I got
lay
up to...
on me.
Well, I'm not going to share it now because that's for a different section. You're going to talk about your ideal list you're working on. I'm not going to share my current list.
Is this your finished list?
Yes, I'm done.
Okay.
So I have finished my 3K Night Lord list. It uses the Terror Assault Rite of War, which, for those that know what that does, that's what I'm using. That gives you a rough idea of the feel of the army. And I went for that kind of sneaky ambush feel that the Night Lords have. But they only really attack when they can ambush, when they can sneak in, when they think they've got the upper hand. Whether they have or not is kind of, you know, you see in the game. But I'm really happy with it. It took me kind of 42 lists or something crazy to get there, but I'm happy, and I've broken it down into 1,000 point increments.
Cool.
So when we eventually get all our guys together and we do a 1,000 point review I guess, would be the best way, and sharing our lists and locking those in.
Yep.
Then you'll get to hear about it then. So I didn't see a point in repeating it.
No.
But yes, I'm really happy that I got those locked in and ready. Other than that, I started Mechanicum, like I said, literally just started, because I said I would, and I wanted to beat Sam's diss of only being able to read 5 pages, so I read 6. Just so that I could go, yay, and feel good about myself. So that'll be cool to finish that over Christmas and have a bit of extra time to sit about and read that.
Cool.
Maybe even on Christmas Day. And then, yeah, and just get that done and move on to, I think, can't remember what the next book for me is that isn't read. So I think it's up to something like Deliverance Lost, somewhere around there. But, yeah, I'm not sure. But that'll be cool to get that book done. And the only other thing I wanted to chat about in MISC is that we will have the competition that we've mentioned a couple of times now, or maybe once last episode. Feels like ages ago, but it was only 2 weeks. We will be launching that in January, so we got, you know, the next 6-7 weeks to get it all sorted, exactly what we're going to do, and in January episode, in our 17 episode, we will share the details and how you can win some awesome prizes.
Awesome.
So yeah, just wanted to put that stake in the ground for us more than anything else, so we get it done for January.
Cool.
So I guess that's kind of a hobby commitment as well.
Awesome.
But anyway, that's my MISC. What about you?
So my MISC is, I finished reading Age of Darkness. There was an awesome story which nearly made me start Iron Hands.
Yeah.
Where basically there's this Iron Hand. I'm not going to go too much detail.
It could be your second 30k army.
Oh, no.
It might happen.
It might happen, yes. So Iron Hands, there's this old band of Iron Hands on this planet. And basically these new Iron Hands turn up and go, we want you to come and join us in the crusade against the Emperor, because the Emperor's bad. And they're like super loyal.
Yeah.
And then it's basically them fighting it out with their own brothers. And the siege. And it talks about how Titans come down and they get wrecked by like lava and oil. And it is so cool.
Yeah, I mean, it was an interesting story. I remember reading it. Well, because Iron Hands are considered a very loyal legion, because they pretty much get decimated on Isfahan 5.
Yeah.
Very early on. And you don't hear that much about any of those kind of legions. So Salamanders, Raven Guard, Iron Hands going traitor. Because a lot of them die loyalists.
Yeah.
And then the ones that are left, you just assume are loyalists because the traitors treated them so horribly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But actually, there was things going on in the background, and as you read more and more into the books, you see these little chinks in the armour and people being corrupted even before Isfahan 5 and afterwards. So yeah, it's really cool to have a story where it's loyalist versus traitor of the same legion.
Mm.
You don't see it very often in the Heresy.
What's the tagline? Iron within, iron without.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's kind of like where I'm heading to. What else? MISC. I've got my 30k list, so I'm just going to go through it.
Yeah, let's do it. This is obviously in the works, so it may change, it may not. You may hear it exactly the same when he breaks it down into his increments. But we're going to go through your 3k?
3k, full 3k.
So this is your full 3k, first draft.
First draft. Right, so it's a knight list with a Mechanicum ally of Cybernetica ally.
Yeah, and we were chatting about this before, because the book says that knights count as ally Mechanicum.
Yep.
So we were trying to work out a way, like, you can't ally with yourself, but then we talked about having two different detachments as one army.
Yep.
So that you can get the HQs and stuff, and although that's a bit of a benefit, it makes complete sense.
Yep.
And I can't see anywhere in the rules that would say you cannot do this.
Yep.
And yeah, personally, for our group of friends and for our gaming experience, I can't see anyone having a problem with it. I mean, if we went to a 30k event, which might happen, you know, like Greg Dan runs one through the Imperial Truth,
yep,
which looked really cool, he might question it and you might have to tweak it for that event.
Yeah.
But then they run much lower than 3k.
Yeah.
So it shouldn't be a problem. Like Mechanicum with a knight. Yeah. Rather than, you know, knights with Mechanicum.
Mm.
But for our escalation league, like, I can't see a problem with it. It makes complete sense to me. And so we're going to do it.
Right. So the way it works is I've got a knight, as I'm calling my main detachment.
Yes.
And the knight formation uses special house roles.
Yes.
And those house roles benefit different people, the knight with different special abilities.
Yes.
You pay for them. So I think for the first one, you pay like 35 points.
Yeah, I think it is.
It's around 35, 25 points for each one of them. So there's obviously the benefit, but you pay for that benefit.
Yes.
You can also pay, you can also get points back for if you take a hit. Like, so if you go down a lower armor, you can get 20 points back from your knight.
Yeah, so you can go for weaker knights, but maybe squeeze some extra ones in once you do that across the board. Yeah.
So keep in mind, I'll read out the type of that knight I've chosen, the benefit, and I've got the book. I'll go through what they are.
Don't worry too much about the titles, but just that it gets this benefit.
Okay.
Because I think a lot of people, including myself, won't have a clue what you're talking about when you say Seneschal and things like that. I think, yeah, just saying, cool, I paid 35 points to give it hit and run or whatever will be suffice.
Sufficient. Oh, this is a big book.
Yeah, the £70 books are really heavy, but they're so gorgeous. Unbelievably.
Right. As you can awesome. Hear, I have the book in front of me.
Yeah.
So my HQ, it's called a Seneschal. I pay an extra 50 points for the knight, and I get Master Knight and Ideal Mission Commander. Master Knight gives me 1+ to weapon skill and ballistic skill, and a 1+ to my any invulnerable saves.
Invulnerable. Yeah, you go.
Saves that I may or may not have on my knight.
Yeah.
So the knight I've chosen to fulfil that criteria is going to be a knight paladin.
Yeah. So this is going off the background of the Mechanicum book, isn't it, in House Tyrannus?
The Mechanicum book. So in the beginning of the Mechanicum, where it's raining on Mars, the knight...
Whoa, I haven't read this yet.
Yes, you have. Have you read the first 5 pages?
Oh, all right, yeah, all right. But, you know, I just... Don't go too far.
Right, okay. So on that, in the opening of that book, it talks about the leader of the House Tyrannus, whichever his name is, I've got it written down. I themed my list after the three knights that appear at the beginning with their loadouts and the names of them. So the leader of the House Tyrannus pilots a knight paladin with a rapid fire battle cannon and like a standard paladin. So it's rapid fire battle cannon chainsword. With a chainsword.
Yeah.
Okay. I've also given him biocorrosive rounds.
Oh, yes. What do those do?
Oh, I have to turn over to the next page. Biocorrosive rounds. 30-inch range, strength 2, AP 6, heavy 3, poison 4+.
Okay, so is it an alternative shot to your battle cannon? Or are they for your stubbers? Or
they're for
what
the heavy
for?
Stubbers.
Oh, okay.
Strength 2 is a bit weird.
Well, it's because it's poisoned.
After map back strengthen.
Yeah, because you always wound on what the poisoned is. What is it poisoned?
Poison 4+.
Yeah, so it always wounds on a 4+.
So if I'm shooting like a Primarch,
the only thing that makes that worse with having a low strength is if it was a higher strength, you'd get rerolls. So if your strength of the weapon is higher than the bracket would be.
Yeah.
So let's say it was strength 5 and you were shooting toughness 4.
Yep.
That becomes a 3+ rather than a 4+.
Okay.
And it's rerollable.
Okay.
So having strength 2 just makes it a little bit less competitive, maybe.
Yeah.
Like, it's still strong. It's still a poison weapon that can...
If I shoot a Primarch, which is, what, toughness 6?
Some of them, toughness 6 or 5.
Toughness 6 with heavy stubbers, 4+ wound.
Yeah, and you got, you know, you can get demon princes and greater demons in word bearers lists, and gradually you'll see that more often in some of the other legions, I think.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of the other Mechanicum beasties could take that.
Yeah.
I think the Thanatar is a monstrous creature, so that poison would be helpful.
Yeah, so there are benefits to it.
Yeah, oh, totally. They're very cool as well.
And yeah, and it's very, that's how he ran his, so yeah. That's cool.
No, that's awesome.
So my next troop choices are filled with two, one Knight Paladin and one Knight Errant.
So that's the multi-melter blast gun, isn't it?
Multi-melter blast gun, and then another...
I know that's not what it's called, but that's what I call it, multi-melter blast gun.
I'll find out the exact name in 2 seconds. What? We can't have... where's it gone? The thermal cannon.
There you go, yeah, multi-melter blast gun.
The troop choices don't actually get any benefit. You can pay a minus. You can minus 35 points. You, like, go down the invulnerable save, go down weapon skill, ballistic skill.
Not worth it.
But obviously you get 35 points back. I'm not that tight on points, so I'm fine. I'm not going to do anything. It's going to be normal. They just mean that they can hold objectives.
Yeah, they would be interesting to do when we have the point increases.
Yeah.
So if you can squeeze a third knight in, but you're above by 35 points, you just weaken one for that point limit.
Yeah.
And then you still get that extra knight, which is so much more powerful than not having it and being under.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that could really help with... Because you can always give them buffs that's one of the rules for the escalation, but you can't take things away.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
So you can't, like, you know, you can't pay to have a lancer and then next time go, well, I haven't got the points because I've put in two castigators, so that lancer's now a paladin.
Yeah.
No. He was a lancer, so he stays a lancer.
Yeah, it just means I can downgrade the weapon he's got or something like that.
Yeah.
Okay, that's cool. So in the next slot is my elite slot, and I've chosen to use the Orc Teller.
Yeah. The upgrade, sorry.
Yeah, the upgrade's called Orc Teller.
No idea. It's on Archeon, isn't it?
Yes.
Archeon? How would you pronounce that?
Archeon?
I'd call it
Archeron.
Yeah, Archeron? That sounds good.
Archeron.
We'll go with Archeron.
Sorry for
It's the giant Hellstorm Flamer one.
Basically.
It looks so cool. It's my favourite one.
So I've given him the Yorktella rank. It's 35 points. The 35 points gives me one enemy for him. That is when the enemy warlord, a Lord of War unit, other than a flyer, a super heavy walker, ground vehicle, or a gargantuan creature, if I kill that one of those unit types that I select...
Did it say Lord of War, or did it have to be one of those Lord of Wars?
The enemy warlord, a Lord of War, other than a flyer, a super heavy... other than a flyer, a super heavy walker, or a ground vehicle, or a gargantuan creature. So basically, it can't be a Lord of War, a unit other than a flyer. Hang on, this doesn't make sense.
I think it's...
The enemy warlord... A unit of a Lord of War unit other than a flyer, a super heavy walker or ground vehicle, or a gargantuan creature. So I think it can be.
So it can't be any of those. So it's Lord of Wars that are Primarchs, by the sound of it.
That doesn't make sense there.
Because Primarchs aren't gargantuans, I believe.
The enemy war.
They're monstrous creatures.
It's one enemy. The enemy.
You can pause it here if you want.
Yeah, no, it's fine. Let it record. I'll just cut it out.
Fair enough. That gives you some good bloopers while we chat this through.
The enemy warlord, the Lord of War unit, other than a flyer, a super heavy walker, a ground vehicle, or a gargantuan creature, should the Yorktella destroy this unit, causing the last hole point or wound to be lost? It can't be, because the enemy warlord, a Lord of War unit, other than a flyer, a super heavy walker, or ground vehicle, or a gargantuan creature. It's just very poorly worded.
Yeah, so you'll have to look into that.
The enemy warlord, a Lords of War unit other than a flyer.
Full stop.
Comma.
Yeah.
A super heavy walker or ground vehicle or a gargantuan creature.
So it has to be one of those three.
Yeah, so I can't have a flyer.
So it's not killing Primarchs.
But it's the enemy warlord.
Okay, so you can kill the enemy warlord and Lord of Wars that are walkers, super heavy walkers, gargantuan creatures, and ground vehicles, but they just can't be flyers.
Yeah, so it's
just very badly worded.
It's very poorly worded.
But that's how I would read it. It's worth checking.
Yep, I'll check it.
So that's pretty cool, though.
So if I kill one of those, or the unit is fleeing the table, I get an additional D3 victory points.
Wow.
This is in a provision to any mission, slay the ward, etc. If the sworn enemy unit is destroyed or removed from play by any other means, no additional victory points are scored for the sworn enemy unit by either side. If the sworn enemy still remains in play at the end of the game, the owning player gains one victory point.
Okay, so if you nominate your sworn enemy at the beginning of the game, if that model is still alive, then
you get 1 point.
I get a point.
If it's dead, or fleeing, I get 3 points.
No, yes.
D3 points.
And if it didn't it say if it died but wasn't killed by him, no one gets a point.
Yeah, yeah. So if the sworn enemy unit is destroyed or removed from play by any other means, no additional victory points are scored.
Okay, so it's additional. So say Conrad Kurz, who's a Lord of War, and my Primarch, Warlord.
Yep.
If he dies by one of the other knights, you'd still get Slay the Warlord, but you wouldn't get any bonuses because it wasn't the Archeron that did it. And if I keep him alive, then I get a plus 1 point.
Yep.
Okay, I really like that kind of rule. That's cool.
Gives you something to aim for, but nothing too major.
Yeah, I mean, that plus one could technically lose you a game, but it's less likely to.
Yep. And then also I get from Death I Strike, if the knight is destroyed in an assault against their foe before any other effects take place, for example, catastrophic damage table, the knight may immediately make an additional single close combat attack using its normal profile and weapons against the sworn enemy.
Okay. So what is the weapon on the Archeron?
A giant chain fist. Let's go to it.
Let's have a quick look while we're here.
Is it in here?
I guess it was.
I've got the PDF, the Archer one. It is an Archer and pattern flame cannon, a chain fist with an inbuilt twin linked heavy bolter.
Yeah, so it's
so
a
chain fist is strength D, AP2, melee, machine destroyer. Machine destroyer gives any target with an armor value rolls of a one on the destroyer damage table may be rerolled.
Okay, so basically, unless you're hitting a vehicle when it blows up, which is pretty impossible.
Yeah.
It basically is that you get an extra 1D dice.
Yeah.
You get one more D weapon attack before you die, which frankly could instantly kill that Primarch.
Yep.
So, oh. I suppose they've got Eternal Warrior? So unless I think D weapons don't negate that.
Did I?
I can't remember. Because you take like D6 plus 6 wounds even at, you know, on a 5 or a 6, I think. But 6 is like immediately die, but I'm not sure. I don't know enough about D weapons.
No, you don't know enough about the D.
Yeah.
And the next knight I've chosen is from Heavy Support. It's the Arbalaster option, and I've chosen to fill this with the Castigator. The Castigator, don't forget, is the guy with the, basically from the front of the Storm Eagle, the guns, the Gatling guns on the front.
Yeah, so not the Storm Eagle, on the Fire Raptor. Yes, it has like two minigun-looking guns on the front.
Yep.
And then a power sword, basically, isn't it?
36-inch range, strength 7, AP 3, heavy 8.
Nice.
And then Warblade is strength 10, AP 2.
Yeah, that's going to gun people down like crazy.
So the option I've given him of... it's heavy support, isn't it? Next page. The Arbalaster. I can't say it. Arbalaster. There we go. Sounds right. This weapon basically allows me to get Tank Hunter special rule. In addition, as long as I didn't move in the preceding movement phase, it may, if the controlling player wishes, count all its weapons as having Skyfire special rule.
Yeah.
In the shooting phase. So I know I don't have, like...
higher strength?
Well, it's strength...
Strength 7.
Strength 7?
So Storm Eagle's 12, so you need 5s to glance?
Yes.
Yeah, that's right. But I was gonna defend it as well. Well, you have 8 shots re-rollable because they're a tank hunter.
Yeah.
So when you get to penetrating after you've hit with your Skyfire, if you don't get any 5s, you get 4s and 3s and 2s and 1s, you just re-roll them.
Yep. That's twin-linked as well.
Yeah, so you've got 2 chances of hitting and then you get a re-roll for the armor pen.
Yeah.
So against ground targets, that's going to be, you know, as long as it's not higher than 13 front armor.
Yeah.
That's quite reliable to get, you know, 2-3 glances. So, yeah, I think that's a brilliant choice.
Yep. So that's my 5 knights that I've got. Five knights. And then next is the...
Mechanicum Detachment.
The Mechanicum. So this is being played as like the House Guard that is linked to House Tyrannus. So what I've done here is I've used the Cybernetica rules from the book that I have not yet got. I've used the Cybernetica rules to kind of build like a mini detachment, all augmented, so they're all robots, so kind of fit in with the theme of the knights and kind of being that detachment of that would be attached to the first knight house.
Yeah, all these robotic units are basically guards and home objective holders for the Magos. So really you have the knight pilots and the Magos are the only kind of humanoid... ish
required
people
required here.
Everything else is robotic and mechanical, which I think is a really cool theme.
Yep. So at the moment, the list is I'm working towards is as follows. Obviously, like I said, I've read the stuff online and kind of done the research into it. I've bought the book now.
Yeah.
I need to wait for Christmas to get the book.
Yeah.
And at that point, I'll go through and check everything to make sure
you might be very close to your list, or you might get by the time of Christmas. Thinking of a different theme or a different idea.
Yeah.
You know, I literally wrote 42, 43
lists,
something like that, of Night Lord lists before I finished. And to be honest, my end result, I might have written that list as number 12.
Yeah.
But deleted it and somehow, and without knowing, have come back to it.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So this Magos Dominus is, I've given him. I've put this on the independent characters forums and got some feedback for some people.
Oh, okay.
There. So at the moment, I've got it still with the conversion beamer. But then I thought...
On the Magos.
On the Magos. But then I thought, if he's going to be walking forward to the Castellax, he's not going to be able to
you don't want a conversion beamer, no.
No, so that's coming off as a heavy weapon. So I've got some points to play around with. I'm going to wait until I get the codex to kind of figure it out.
Where you're going to put those points. Because that could be an extra Thalax or an extra thing.
Basically,
or
yeah.
Some upgrades.
Yep.
Yeah.
So I've got him with just melter bombs, plasma pistols, rad/irrad cleanser.
Yes, the rad cleanser's awesome.
Yep. The troop choices, because it's the cybernetic one, these are all troop choices. I've got two squads of Castellax Castle class battle automator. One squad has got multi-melters in. Squads of two, sorry. So two squads of two.
Oh, okay, yeah, yeah. These are the guys that are middle-sized.
Yeah, middle-sized. So the giant ones.
The giants are Thanatars.
Yep.
With the giant cannon on their plasma bombard cannon.
On their shoulder.
On their shoulder.
Yep.
And then you got the Castellax, who also have a gun on their shoulder.
I have a gun on top, yeah, yeah.
Yep.
And a gun in their arms.
And then the Thalax are the kind of smallest robots.
Yep.
They have, like, the lightning guns, are they
called?
Lightning
guns, yeah.
So, yeah, I'm just trying to get it for people who maybe have seen the models and not sure what the names are.
Yeah.
That's the models we're talking about.
So one of the squads of two has multi-melters for, like, tank hunter style.
That'll be cool.
And the other squad of two are just standard mauler pattern bolt cannons.
Okay.
So they were quite strong against when
buying them will be a pain.
Buying them, £35 from either, from
well, you get three.
You get one.
Oh, yes, they're individual.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, sorry, I'm thinking of the Thalax.
Thalax are in three.
Sorry, yeah. See, Mechanicum really confuses my brain. But, yeah.
They're 35 quid each from eBay. From Forge World.
70 quid a squad. For what they do and for the points they are, that's not too bad.
No.
And these it's something like that for my 10 Raptors for Night Lords. So.
And then two squads of three Thalax. Both squads have melter bombs, multi-melters in a multi-melter in each, and then three heavy chain blades.
Brain. So
obviously they've got lightning guns.
So
as well,
you got two multi-melter Castellax,
yep,
and two with the standard whatever gun it is.
Yep. The standard mauler pattern bolt gun. Yep. Bolt cannon, sorry.
Yep. And then we're now to the Thalax.
To the Thalax, yeah.
Two squads of three.
Two squads of three Thalax. Both have heavy chain blades.
Yeah, okay, for close combat stuff.
Both have melter bombs.
Okay.
And one from each squad has a multi-melter.
Oh, okay, so you didn't go with lightning guns.
With the rest of them got lightning guns.
Oh, what, with the heavy chain blades?
Yeah.
Oh, is that an upgrade to the gun?
Yeah.
Oh, right, I thought that was a trade-off, so you didn't have any shooting.
No, it's not listed this way. This is what I might need to check out.
See, I think the heavy chain blade is a combat weapon that you replace your gun with.
See, they already come as standard with close combat weapons.
Yes, but that's like the little saw on the front of the gun, if you look at the model.
Yeah.
Whereas I think heavy chain blades are like the two-handed chainsaws.
Okay.
That you can get. So I think that's what they are.
Okay, let's have a look.
So if that's the case, you might lose some shooting, which might be worth thinking about.
Might be worth reviewing.
Again, I don't think you'll know until until you get the book.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's someone listening who knows, so feel free to message Sam on
the
page.
By the time this goes out.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, sorry, ignore that.
It's that far out.
Yeah.
Let's have a look. Sorry, I'm just trying to look on the Forge World website.
That's right.
I have them all listed.
Yeah,
here.
I mean, while you're doing that, I'm really happy that you've gone with this kind of Mechanicum Knight feel.
Yep.
Because although I think it'll be a real challenge for some of us in the escalation, because having enough stuff to deal with those knights. But actually, if everyone just had marines, even though you have different legions and different feel, they'd feel like there was something missing. And I'm really happy with the way Forge World are covering those other added bits. So Mechanicum, knights, Solar Auxilia. I think the next book's going to have the militia lists in it.
Yeah.
So you can run basically like Loyalist Guard and cultists for the traitors and build that kind of 30k guard list, whereas Solar Auxilia are almost 30k scions.
So
I'm really looking forward to seeing what that is. So it's nice to have a non-Space Marine Legion player in the escalation group.
It also means that they can kind of go either way in terms of, I know obviously House Tyrannus,
yes,
were very loyal. They were loyal to the Emperor, yeah, and fought against the different houses on Mars. They are called the first Night House of Mars.
Yes.
So the fluff wise, they're very loyal. However, who knows who's loyal in Horus Heresy?
Yeah, there are always those points. I think also it's much easier for you to get caught up in the story of, oh, okay, I'm playing Neil Salamanders.
Mm.
So these guys are fallen Mechanicum and Fallen Knights, and this game they're not House Tyrannis.
Yeah.
Just write that bit out. You still equip them the same. They're still painted the same colours.
Yeah.
But they're just not. They're just a traitor knight, generic traitor knights.
Plenty of them.
Yeah. and then the game makes sense.
Yeah.
Whereas Salamanders versus Space Wolves in 30K, you can't really make sense of it. It's still a fun game, and why would you not do it?
It's one of those factions which is easily transferable between the good side and the bad side.
Yeah, and your fluff and background of the army is the Loyalist side.
Yeah.
But that doesn't stop you just switching that for games when you play a Loyalist.
Yeah.
Which I really like that fact. And that's why I'm looking at doing a Loyalist Legion after Night Lords, because I would rather play Loyalist versus Traitor. You know, like I say, I'm not going to... If someone who does a Traitor Legion says, hey, can I play you? And I've only got my Night Lords. I'll play them. Like, I'm not going to turn down a game with my friend.
In-house fighting, that always happens.
Yeah. I mean, even I just wouldn't put a story to it. It's just a fun game with a friend.
Yeah.
That's fine. I can drop to that level. But if I have a choice where I don't have to drop to that level, I would always prefer that.
Yeah.
So, like I've said, you know, in 40K, I'm only going to play my Space Wolves against Xenos or Traitors, unless someone with a Loyalist army, like your Blood Angels, you wanted to play my Space Wolves. And then I'd go, fine, this is just a fun game with a friend. Fluff doesn't come into it. And I'm okay with
it. The only Space Marines you can play are Grey Knights.
Yeah, Grey Knights works. Yeah. Grey Knights works. That's happened before. But yeah, so anyway, we're on your 30K list.
That's fine. I think that's really cool. That's it.
So yeah, so Magos, two squads of Castellax and two squads of Thalax. All these axes.
Yeah. So that's how they're gonna work at the moment.
Yeah,
that's the list.
Cool.
It will be reviewed once I get the book and everything falls into line.
Yeah.
I think at the moment I'm definitely gonna go with Nighthouse and Mechanicum. None of the legions kind of jump out at me at the moment.
Yeah.
And obviously they're not doing Blood Angels, and I don't know if I necessarily want to do a 30K Blood Angel list.
Yeah.
I'll buy Sanguinous, obviously, just for the painting ability. And I know that Matt is cringing at this.
I'm going to have a fit, I think.
but it's cool. It's all right. And then my first 1,000 points is two knights at the moment.
Yeah, obviously. I mean, we'll get to that when we have our special Life in the Hobby segment.
Episode on it.
Yeah, well, I don't know if it'll be a full episode, but it'll definitely be a whole segment. But yeah, anyway, that's future problems. That's 2016 problems to try and work that one out.
Other misc. I'm starting a league.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
The
flipping
league.
Heck. Yeah.
Not a league.
Yeah. For a segment where we had hardly anything done, this is going on for quite a while.
Yeah.
It's
so
good.
Basically, I've been watching a lot of the American sitcom called The League. The League features people who play fantasy football in America.
Yeah.
And basically, they have a league between their mates, and it looks like jolly good fun. So what I'm going to do is I'm running a 40K version at the moment.
Yes.
It's going to be a year long. It involves our gaming group at the moment. And basically, I've opened up to them. I won't go into too much of the detail, but we're having 6 months of the standard missions.
Yeah.
We're going to take 2 months break because it's over the summer period, so July and August.
Yeah, holidays and busyness with work for me. And it makes sense for our gaming group.
And our gaming group. It makes sense. Everyone will be paired up at the beginning of the month. A mission type will be declared, and they have to play that mission. We're going to try and do it so no faction is repeated. So it'll be a Space Marine player, Orcs, Nids, trying to cover everyone that we can. Everyone we can. And they'll be played and pitted against each other. So it should be quite fluffy.
Yeah.
There's no prize for first place.
Yes.
There is a prize for last place because I'm cruel like that. and there'll be...
I'm going to forfeit all my games just to see what it is.
Oh, you won't want to. so and halfway through, I'll release the award titles.
Yes.
And people can nominate themselves for different awards. And then at the end, we'll vote as a group to kind of come up with these different awards.
Yeah, so will it be that people put forward... So if it was like Best Painted Mini, you'd submit your mini?
Yep. Best Painted Mini.
And you could decide, do you know what, I'm not that great a painter, so I won't go in for that one.
Yeah, so there's a few. There's a few
that's cool.
A few
that's
I'm
cool.
thinking about at the moment is Best Painted Miniature, MVP of the league.
Okay.
So kind of like which captain or which unit has performed the best in it. So it relies on people keeping track of what they've played.
Yeah, that might be a difficult one if we're releasing it halfway through.
It's not for people to submit halfway through, but that's when they need to be thinking about who they're going to submit at the end of the year. It's just to give people the titles, basically.
Yeah, but trying to remember six games backwards to what that one unit did in a whole army could be quite difficult.
Well, If it only comes to the next four games. It's the title heading that.
Yeah, this is not the place to talk about it, but these are cool ideas.
Yeah, so that's and then the final 4 months of the league. Our friend, our buddy Tim, who unfortunately can't be in the league this year, will create us 4 new gaming types.
Awesome.
Which will be very cool because undoubtedly he is mastering the art of creating
games. That stuff. Yeah, he does love that stuff. We came up with some really cool teleporter rules.
Yeah.
That was so fun. Like the objectives were teleporters and you could use them to jump around the board, but you could get lost in the warp and all sorts of shenanigans, and it was very fun. So yeah, I imagine they'll be really good and unique. So yeah looking forward to that part.
We're going to try and theme them to armies and stuff, so it should be quite cool.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, so I'm leaving that in Tim's hand. He's obviously got 6, 7, 8 months to do it, so hopefully it will go as well.
Probably about 6, because you'll probably want to be talking about them at the start of the break, so they're ready for the end of the break.
Yeah, so he's got that time to have a look at them anyway. And then at the end we'll have a big... Because we normally do a gaming day in between Christmas and New Year's, like
yes.
we're doing this year.
Yeah, yeah.
So we'll have like either the last game then or like the award type thing then.
Yeah.
To kind of present people.
By that time, we might be inviting other people outside the group to come.
Yep.
Indeed. Who knows? This year's a bit early for that, but maybe.
Maybe. But yes, yeah, so that's the idea. Obviously, I'll report on how it goes throughout the year. I'm kind of hoping it works well. It'd be nice. It's another good way of structuring the league.
Yeah, I think with that and the escalation happening for 30K, we'll have some lots of things to talk about.
I'm thinking of running if the league works successfully, thinking about running it at the moment it's 40K pure only.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about running it as a 30K league next year.
That'd be really cool.
If we're at that place where we can do that.
Yeah, and we should be at least moving towards our 2K lists.
Yeah.
And remember, one of the things you didn't share is that you work out the points with your opponent.
Yeah, so there's no point. I'm not setting a points limit or points.
Yeah.
So you can have a 750-point game if you're short that month, or you can have a 10,000-point game.
If you've got the time. Yeah.
It will make the relic a little bit interesting for a 10,000-point
Yeah,
game.
I think it'll also, I mean, you know, it slightly unbalances it, because if you're playing kill points that month and you have a 5,000-point game, you know, you could score more points because there's just more units on the board. But
it relies on
let's face it,
the league is going to have to rely on people using the DBAD rule.
Don't be a div.
If people are being a div, then they're kind of losing the point of the league, and I won't invite them next year because it's my league and I can do what I like.
It doesn't even need to be that far. You know, the league is for fun and having a good time with friends and giving some purpose to our games. So, you know, if they play a 3K game and my game is 1,000 points and they end up getting twice the victory points because there's just more units on the board, I don't care.
Yeah,
like I had a fun game, they had a fun game, and they've got more points than me, so what? There's not a winner award anyway.
Nope.
Like, so
it's about, last place.
It's about having fun and playing fun games.
Yeah,
so I don't think we have to worry.
No, hopefully not. The way point is, so I didn't tell you how scoring's going to work, and your victory points directly count towards how many points to your overall score. You'll get a 3-point plus modifier for winning, 2 points for drawing, and 1 point for losing. And if the game doesn't take place, you get 0 points for both, obviously, your point score and your the competing score. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah, see how it goes and tweak it for the next year and maybe 30K after that. But that'll be really cool.
Hopefully.
I think with that 40K league and 30K escalation happening all next year, I think the wealth of games and things we'll be able to chat about next year will be really cool. Because it'll be, right, this is my 30K game this month, and this is my 40K league game, and this is my 40K friendly game outside of the league. And
yeah,
it'll be really cool. It's exciting.
It's excitable.
Exciting times.
Right. Games?
Games, yeah, let's have a quick break.
Hi, I'm Liam. If you like the Adeptus Terra podcast as much as I do, go and check out their Facebook page and give it a like. The address is www.facebook.com/TheAdeptusTerraPodcast, or go on to their iTunes and give them a 5-star review. Bye.
So, games of the month.
Games of the month.
Did you get one in?
Yes.
Okay, we'll get to yours. I'll start with mine.
Yep, go ahead.
So I played Imperial Knight Tom, or Death Watch Tom, I think we should call him.
Yeah.
Because it's much more Death Not Watch than a knight. You've got a knight. Like, it's not that special.
What?
His knights are awesome. Don't get me wrong.
Very good.
But yeah, Death Watch Tom, I think he'll be
even
from here on now.
Even if he always claims the cover state from being in a
crater. No, he doesn't do that. He doesn't do that. Having played him twice, he doesn't do that. But yeah, I played Death Watch Tom with 2,000 points. It was my Tyranids versus his Ordo Xenos, or Death Watch. And just going to go through the lists before I move on.
Cool.
Open up my Quartermaster for mine. I've been playing around with my Tyranids, just kind of having fun with them until the new decks came out.
Awesome.
Which is supposed to be early next year, so we'll see if it is or not. But I had a Walking Hive Tyrant with Lashwick Bonesword. I had two Lictors, which came in Deep Strike. I had a Malanthrope, so a Venomthrope with Synapse and giving the cover saves and a few extra bonuses. So, yeah, quite a cool little Forge World rules. I'm using a converted Zone Throat for him at the moment, which is a bit small, but it's just until, again, the new Codex comes out, make sure the cover saves aren't, you know, affected too much, and see if I'm going to buy one of the models, because it's an investment. They're like £50. So I'll only get that if the next Codex keeps them viable.
Yeah.
So we'll see. Then I've got two squads of 20 Gene Stealers, because I really love Gene Stealers.
Yeah.
All running up the board. Squad of 30 Hormigants. So that was fun, running Gaunts again. So yeah, just I've always run Gene Stealers and Monstrous Creatures, so it was nice to have a bit of more bodies.
It'd be interesting to see my Night List versus your...
It would just... You'd table me in a turn.
The flame will be good.
Everything would be good. Literally, we'll get to that. We'll get to that. I had a Hive Crone in reserve, so flying, haywire missiles, the flamer. I had my Dima Charon in, which was awesome. And then I had a Tyrannophex with the Electroshock Grub, so the haywire flamer and the acid spray for the torrent flamer.
Electroshock Grubs,
that's what they're called, haywire flamer, yeah. They need some kind of name and background towards their weapons. And then two Trigons, so big, tall, worm-looking things. Not the Morlock that burrows up and does damage, but the Trigons. Just got more attacks. They seem to be a bit better.
Okay.
For 50 points more.
It's the little arms, to be honest.
Yeah, all those little arms just scratch you to death.
Scratch you!
And then the giant mouth. But yeah, so that was my 2K list. Lots of things, everything deploys other than the Hive Crone and the Lictor. The Lictors, sorry. And that was up against Tom's Death Watch Force. So Tom's Death Watch Force, going back to my notes, was his two Death Watch squads in drop pods. One Combi Melters kitted out, one Combi Flamers and Heavy Flamers.
Yep.
The Melters had his, I believe it was Captain or Chapter Master, and he was running Pedro Cantor's rules.
Okay.
So yeah, Chapter Master. And he's running Pedro Cantor's rules. He had a really cool converted Chapter Master with a bolter on his wrist and a power fist, you know, to sit, kind of represent Cantor, but he wanted his own model, so it wasn't.
Yeah.
And in Death Watch colors, looks awesome. He had Grav Centurions in a drop pod on their own.
Yes.
So that's three drop pods. So the two Death Watch squads came in first turn, which was painful.
Yep.
Then he had his Knight, which had the Gatling Cannon, the Rapid Fire Battle Cannon, missiles on top, and lots obviously of lots of fire.
Flamey Death, not Flamey Death.
Dacker Knight, Dacker as Knight. I like to call it. So that
such
was there.
A good player.
Yeah, sorry. What else was in there? He had his Derradeo, or the Dorito Dreadnought.
Spicy Dorito.
That thing is unbelievably nasty. That's the first time I've ever played one. And man, that was painful. Then he had a Thunderfire Cannon. And he had an Inquisitor with Conversion Beamer with three Servitors with Plasma Cannons, which was really cool. And they were converted up with Chaos Cultists and kind of Laz Cannons chopped up to make the Plasma Cannons.
Okay.
They looked really cool. All his conversions and stuff look really good, to be honest. He's quite a hobbyist at heart. And that was the Force. So I definitely outnumbered him. But his firepower was very deadly.
Very deadly.
Very deadly. So we had the Scouring as our mission. So six objectives, randomly scoring. And we had Dawn of War deployment for a change. So long table edges, which was nice.
Woo!
Yeah, it was good. the problem was, is you reveal the scouring objectives in after deployment. So after your infiltrators, after your scout moves, all that, just before turn one, you reveal the points values.
Right, okay.
And I actually had all the high points.
Okay.
Which wasn't handy, considering my army's an assault army.
Yeah.
So if I stayed off his force, he just shot me to death off those objectives, held the lower points and win.
Yeah.
And he wasn't going to need to come to me. It worked out very, very quickly that he did not need to come to me if I just stayed on those objectives.
No.
So I had to run off the expensive objectives to try and kill his units and then somehow run back or at least hold the ones he was holding. So I was up against it. It sounds very weird. For like a guard army, that would have been heaven.
Yeah.
You know, or even a marine army where you've got the saves, you've got cover saves maybe. But NIDs just, no, they just evaporate as soon as stuff shoots at them.
Right.
So, yeah, it was a bit of a... it was interesting. He was like, oh, man. And I was like, oh, man, because he's never played Tyranids.
Yeah.
So he was like... And the way my armies play, it was nothing really holds back. Like, the whole idea is the whole wave moves around the Manonthrope.
Yeah.
With a few monstrous creatures on the edges, just punching anything, getting close, and yeah, and getting those hordes into combat with hopefully getting good cover saves. But, yeah, it was a very bloody game. And long story short, I got annihilated.
Turn.
So I was actually tabled turn three.
Oh.
Turn three, which was probably the quickest I've ever been tabled.
I got that wrong. Last episode, I said...
Yes, someone called you out on that, didn't they?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So,
who was it?
It was... which,
I want to say it was Alan.
It was
Alan.
Yeah.
Because he played you with his Eldar,
it was Elder
didn't
Alan from the Path of the Artisan.
Yes, yes.
Artisan.
You got it right the first time.
Artisan. Anyway, so it was Alan from Path of the Artisan, and he reminded me of the such a terrible, annihilating, almost
defeat.
Brutal defeat of the Eldar versus
your
Grey Knights.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I actually had got tabled in the last 2 years, so I was wrong, and I apologise, Alan, profusely.
Yeah.
But yeah, so...
It was very funny to watch you call him out. I think it was me that replied to it.
No, I
replied first.
Oh, okay, hang on.
I saw it and just thought this is too funny not to reply, and was hoping you wouldn't see it, and then you did see it and comment, and I was like, ah. But yeah, it was very funny, very funny.
Okay, so the quote is, I've never actually been tabled in the last couple of years, in which Sam forgets our game at Warhammer World at Easter. I put saying, I have no recollection of this game you talk of. There's no reply from you.
There is a reply. Where's it gone?
Was it swearing? Was it you defending my honour?
No, I can't remember now. I remember commenting something. Maybe I just thought it was really funny, was going to put something and then deleted it and thought you should see it.
Okay.
Maybe, I can't remember. But anyway. That's an aside. But yeah, so I got tabled kind of turn three. I mean, it was a really fun game, but just Tyranids could not stand up to that firepower. The Knight, you know, killed my Warlord first turn it shot. Like that Gatling cannon, strength 6, AP 3, heavy 12.
So
it's 12 shots, wounded me on 4s.
Yeah.
And no saves, because I've got no invuls on any of my HQs or any of my monster creatures. They weren't close enough to my Malanthrope because those hordes just take up so much space.
Yeah.
So yeah, they just puffed into pink smoke, I guess, just blood everywhere and death. I lost the Dema the same way, just one round of shooting, like from 4 wounds to nothing.
Yeah.
It was just painful. The blast weapons coming in, the Thunderfire with ignores cover, so my Malanthrope was useless.
Yeah.
Just losing tons of Gene Stealers. On one flank, the Flamers came down and flamed into my Gene Stealers, and they just died in fiery death. The other side, the Melters came down, shot at my Trigon, took a couple of wounds off. I charged in with my Gene Stealers. We kind of messed that up because I charged into cover,
yeah.
So it would have been initiative one,
yeah.
But we forgot, so I killed a load of the squad. Then when we realised, we went back, and they got their attacks back, and we resolved it. We kind of fudged it and made it work. But that kind of ruined that wing.
Yeah.
And the Derridaeo just killed anything it shot, frankly, because it's got a BS5,
yep.
Twin-linked weapons,
yep.
So twos to hit rerolling. And then if they're shooting vehicles, they have tank hunter, so they got rerolls on vehicles. Obviously, yep. It didn't affect me, but he was just wounding me with everything, and I was just getting no saves, or any saves I was getting, I was failing. It was really one of those games.
Yep.
The only cool thing that happened for me was my lictors popped up in the big building we were playing on your urban board.
Yep.
So Sam's got a big building that's just huge, really.
12 by, I want to say 12 by 10. It's square.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe. Anyway, but so he had his Derridaeo in it with the Inquisitor and the plasma cannons and a scout squad eventually. And the Thunderfire cannon was like in the back of it. And my lictors popped up right in the middle to kind of scare the whole load of them. and then ended up charging the Derridao and killing it in combat.
Okay.
With strength 6 rending weapons, are pretty good.
That's cool.
So yeah, I was happy that I killed, first time I played one, I killed a Derridao, or a Dorito Dreadnought, because I can't pronounce Derridao properly.
Derridao.
Whatever it is, Dorito. Dorito Dreadnought.
Dorito Dreadnought.
But yeah, so I was really happy I killed that. But I think other than killing that, I killed the Flamer Deathwatch squad with a whole flank of my army.
Yeah, yeah.
And pretty much the Melter. I think I killed the whole Melter squad, but Pedro Cantor counts as was still alive.
Okay.
And I was tabled. It was just brutal. Just everything was gunning into me, ignoring cover or not scattering. And it was kind of painful.
Yeah.
Like for the models, for it to happen. Tom's a really fun opponent, and I didn't feel disillusioned. I mean, when we put the two armies down, I kind of realized this was going to happen.
Yeah.
Just because his current meta is strong and the Nids are just not, you know, and the force I was bringing. If I was bringing all my flyers, he would have struggled. So if I had my two flying Hive Tyrants, my old style of list.
Derridao has Skyfire?
If it doesn't move, yes, but that's one thing.
Yeah.
Because he didn't even have Skyfire on his knight that time.
No.
So everything else in the army would be snapshotting.
Yeah.
And I would have had, you know, a couple of flying monster creatures that, you know, could do some decent damage with some psychic powers. And
yeah.
So it was just kind of, my list is how I've been playing Nids at the moment. If I thought about the list more, I could have brought a more competitive one.
Yeah.
But I wasn't interested in that. I'm not really interested in that anymore. This is the list I want to bring, so I'm going to bring it.
Yeah.
And if it fails, it fails. If it does great, it does great. There's, you know, there, even in that game, you know, the two, one really funny moment and one awesome moment was the Lictors destroying the Derridao. But
yeah.
I love that. That was great. And the funny moment, which was just awful for me, is my Hive Crone came on from reserve, was intercepted by the Derridao,
yeah.
Took 3 wounds from that, then hit the ground,
because
I rolled a 1 on my grounding test, so took a 4th wound. Didn't do anything in the shooting phase because it was now on the ground and out of, you know,
everything.
Shooting anything really. And then next turn it got its last wound taken off by the Grav Centurions. So it just came in and died, which is just brilliant. But, and I found that funny, you know. And Tom was a really nice guy and kind of apologizing, like, oh man, this is brutal. And I'm like, oh, it's cool. Let's just keep going. I want to see what I can kill. I knew at that point that I was probably going to be tabled, that I was definitely going to lose. So, hey, let's see what I can kill. Let's have some fun with this. Because ultimately, getting together and playing someone is about having that fun.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I didn't feel bad after the game.
It's not like you're a sore loser and flip the table or anything like that.
No, it was an awesome game. I loved it. And afterwards, me and Tom had a really good conversation about, you know, lists and you know, powering down lists depending on what you're playing and all this stuff. And I think Tom felt a bit guilty. I mean, it's 2 months in a row that he's basically destroyed me and you.
Well, I wasn't destroyed.
Yeah, you were. You had like, you were basically 2 models away from being tabled, I think.
One, but...
Yeah, exactly.
No, it wasn't that bad. It wasn't turn 3.
No, well, you know, you were playing Blood Angels.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was.
But yeah, so I think he was feeling a bit guilty for just destroying us and teaching us how to play this game that we love.
Yeah.
But yeah, I had no problem with his list. I love the fact he had a conversion beamer Inquisitor.
Still makes that's, me want to do.
You know, that's not watch. A. Yeah, that's not exactly a. You know, if you were bringing crazy competitive build, that would have been a psychic Inquisitor with combi flamer in with the flamer squad to give them shred.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
through
yeah.
psychic powers or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, that having plasma servitors are not exactly crazy competitive. Like,
got a chance to blow each other up.
Yeah, kill each other and scatter off people. You know, it didn't feel like he brought a list to beat me into the ground. He just brought a list that was fluffy, that was the units he liked and made sense to him, and it made sense to me. So yeah, I thought it was a brilliant game, really good fun. It's, in some ways, it's quite nice to know that you haven't got everything sussed.
Yeah.
You know, it was like, oh, okay, that was interesting. And I learned some things. So going on to learn what I could do differently, I learned how awesome Derridaos are.
Yep.
That dread was awesome, and I'm glad I killed it. And the Tyranids really need help with fighting those strong lists.
Mm.
They really need some help. Because we were talking about, you know, like Gene Stealers are awesome in combat, but they've got no saves against bolters.
Yeah.
Just regular bolters. When they charge into terrain, they have moved through cover, so they don't lose the minus two, but they drop to initiative one because they don't have assault grenades.
Yeah.
And these are... they don't have guns. They've got no way of shooting. So there needs to be more buffs in that assault area if they're really going to be competitive again.
Yeah.
So, yeah, just highlighted that here's an army that's very well planned out and, I guess, an army that's using rules that are quite up there. They're not the hardest and best, I wouldn't say, but Space Marines are quite up there with their strength in rule set. And they just got outclassed. You know, even the best monstrous creatures that I could bring, you know, Trigons have got 7 attacks on the charge.
Your Tyranids thoroughly got deathwatched.
Yeah, they fully did, and it was awesome to see. And hey, the Ordo Xenos won out the day.
Good.
Great. You know,
Imperium.
Yeah. Yeah, it was great. It was really fun, but they definitely need some help. I mean, for me, the only unit that I could really choose as my favourite were the Lictors, who destroyed the Dorito Dreadnought, which I just loved that. That was amazing. And it was really fun. Like, they popped up, you know, very fluffy in the building, in the ruins, weren't seen. Attack jumped on the back of the Dreadnought, ripped it apart. It was awesome. So that was my favourite unit. I don't know what Tom's was. I didn't ask him. I think for me, if I was going to pick something, that Knight is just kills so much.
And I'm going to have 5.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't remind me. But yeah, so...
very kindly, actually. Tom is going to show me how he magnetised his might. To have multiple loadouts.
Yeah, that would be really cool. Yeah, yeah. If we ever cover magnetization, we should get someone like him in.
Yep.
To talk about it, because we have no clue. Yet. Yeah. But anyway, that was my game. Do you want to go into yours?
Mine wasn't so much a comprehensive battle report like yours. I kind of didn't even know I was having the game when I came down.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's cool when that happens, though.
Yeah, yes and no.
Only because of the result.
So I played Mark. Mark is a very good player.
Mm.
Very good.
Yeah, he's won some tournaments in the past, a long time ago now, yeah. But has won some tournaments.
So the only way I can describe Mark is he sees the units like Neo sees the Matrix.
Yeah.
He sees pieces together that optimize everything.
Yeah,
it's awesome optimization. Yeah. So it's not like, I'm going to do this to kill you. It's, this is really cool. I want to see how it works. And it's awesome.
Yeah, I think the thing is I think you could put any unit in front of him.
Yeah.
Even something like Pyrovores that kind of suck. And it'll be really interesting to see if Games Workshop fix them in the new Tyranid Codex so that everyone buys them, because no one owns them, because they suck that bad.
Yeah.
But anyway, I think you could give them to him and go, cool, come up with a tactic to make these work. And somehow he would.
Yeah.
He just would.
He's,
you know?
A phenomenal Neo Gamer.
Yeah.
Neo Gamer. Right, so Neo Gamer Mark. Good name.
We don't need one. There's only one of him.
Well, everyone else has got.
No, not everyone else. Only the people that have multiple. So we have multiple Bens.
Deathwatch Tom.
Because we have.
Salamander Tom.
Salamander Tom.
And we have.
Or just Tyrannosaurus Rex Tom.
He doesn't listen to the podcast anyway.
So. Yeah, probably. Yeah, it's all good. It's all good.
That's a good little story.
Inside joke. Sorry about that.
So anyway, so I played Mark. He basically ran my Mechanicum detachment from my knight list.
Yes.
With the adding of this random unit, which I have no idea what the names are, who all have conversion beams.
Oh, they were, I want to call them Myrmidon. Yeah, the Myrmidon Destructors.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Yeah, because there's Myrmidon Secateurs or something like that, the close combat variant.
Yeah.
And then there's the Myrmidon Destructors that come with like heavy grav or heavy conversion beamers
yeah
so
he had those. He also had 2 squads of Thalax with lightning guns and metal bombs and nastiness and all that, and then 1 squad of Castellax,
yes,
2 of them with Omegos Dominus behind
yes,
the walking
yeah.
boards. I took a small selection of my guard, 3 Lehman Russes, 2 standard battle tanks, 1 Punisher with Pask, 2 Wyverns, Flyer, which never made it on the board.
That was hilarious.
Yep. And then a squad of vets, just to see what would happen.
Yeah.
And
that was equal points,
equal
just to put
points.
That out there, you know.
So my 5 vehicles, 1 Flyer, and 1 squad of 10 dudes versus 6, 9, 10, 11, 12 models.
Yeah.
So yeah. Anyway. So it was 1,000 points. I think 1,000 points.
Yeah, roughly.
The mission was just kill each other, see what happens. I wanted to see how they worked. That was the main reason, because he had the red book with him, and I wanted to see how they worked in conjunction with each other, because they were quite close to what I was going to be running anyway. So it was quite key. I wanted to see what would actually happen with them.
Yeah, I was really interested in your game, and I felt very tempted to just walk over, because it frankly didn't matter what was going on my table. But I didn't want to kind of let, you know, I felt there was a couple of times where I get drawn to tables even when I'm gaming.
Yeah.
So I'm a watcher. I like watching that stuff happen. And I was like, oh, what?
You're a watcher. You like to see stuff happen.
Don't turn that into weird. I like walking around games and looking at the models and seeing people's tactics and things like that, Sam. I have to, you know, explain everything clearly to stop your warped mind.
Matt likes walking around tables.
I sense chaos taint. Have you got a Slaaneshi taint? Slaaneshi, pleasure and pain.
Anyway, so it's 12-inch deployment long table edges.
Yeah.
But not that I sort of moved at all. Actually, none of my guys moved.
Yeah, really?
Yeah.
Movement phase done.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah. To be fair, though, a guard army that plays like that tends to not really have a movement phase.
No,
there's a bit of repositioning and then shoot everything.
Yeah, so kind of how did the game go? The highlights were the Thalax walked through my Leman Russ.
Yeah.
Literally. They got annihilated in one turn of assault. I made some really stupid decisions, like not doing my orders. I always forget orders as a guard player. I'm the worst at it.
Suppose it's still, although it's not new, because you started this year, it's not like you've been playing guard for like 4 or 5 years.
No,
it's like people like Liam and Everything Ben, you know, who play guard a lot, just go, right, cool, there's the movement phase and then there's the order phase.
Yeah.
You know, whereas for us, it's like movement, shooting, halfway through the shooting, oh yeah, I had orders.
Yeah. So I need to get used to using them more, but that kind of let me down because I sort of didn't move them away from the HQ, which meant that they got destroyed faster. And yeah, it was pretty awful. Pretty awful. Lost the Wyverns, like, turn two from the conversion beamers, because they were, like, 60 inches away, so they got maximum kill. The Thalax, like I said, walked through my guard, my Lima Russes. The Castellax just walked towards my Wyverns and 10-man squad and just annihilated them as they were walking forwards, because they obviously can move and shoot everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty awful. The end result, got a table turn three.
Table turn three, brothers. Yeah.
Let's watch streams. But my flyer didn't even come on the entire time.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
That was so annoying. I mean, it could have done so much.
Yeah.
Just hovering around, firing at stuff.
Yeah.
But anyway, not bitter whatsoever. What could I have done differently?
Not play.
Well, the main...
That's what I felt like.
The important thing for that is I never went in it thinking, I'm going to try and win this game. It was more, I want to see what they can do.
Yeah, because you were spending a lot of time talking with Mark about the Mechanicum, and then I think, did you or him decide, well, let's show you?
Yeah, he did. So he was like, oh, let's just have a quick game. So it was interesting sort of seeing what the Castellax could do. Yeah. I wasn't too worried about the conversion beamers because...
Yeah, you weren't playing those.
I'm not going to play those at the moment. But the Castellax and the Thalax, I wanted to see what they're doing, especially the Magos Prime or Magos Dominus, whatever it was.
Yeah.
So that was quite important for me. The favourite unit of the game, I really liked the Thalax with their ability just to kind of continue walking and fire.
Yeah, that's cool.
And they seem to have like a billion wounds.
They're just very hard to wound them.
Yeah.
I think.
So if that's any good sign, hopefully my 3K will do really well.
Your army is definitely going to be one of those armies that is hard to remove from the table. But when things do go and go the way of your opponent, you will definitely feel it.
Yeah.
Like every knight that goes down will be like, oh, that's that section of the board that I need to be careful of.
Well, it'll be that section of the board that's going to be a massive crater because it explodes.
Yeah, that's true.
I've just removed Horus because I've just blown him into oblivion.
It's very hard to kill Primarchs, even knights. Genuinely.
He's going to suicide knight into them.
Yeah. I mean, you can take, like, Kurz would probably go down pretty well, but some of them, like Vulcan, when Neil plays Vulcan, he's got a strength 10 AP 1 hammer. Like 7 attacks on the charge.
At what point?
Just destroy a knight in a go.
At what point do you think we will see Primarchs?
Because
we're obviously going up in 1,000-point increments.
So you could see them at 2,000, some of them.
Yeah.
Most of them, I think you'll see at 3,000.
Okay, maybe we should create a rule. You can only have them in 3,000 points.
No, no, especially if you're bringing knights at 1,000. No, no, no. I think, you know, I think it will come down to the tactics you're playing. So one of the ideas that I had was I was going to bring Kurz in at 2,000 points because he could.
Yeah.
Because I didn't have a Praetor.
Yeah.
So I needed Kurz to be able to play my Rite of War.
Okay.
Whereas in 1,000 points, we've said you can just play your Rite of War.
Yeah.
You know, you just have any HQ, and as long as you've got one troop, you can play that Rite of War and be generous.
Why am I being penalised?
Because you're playing knights, so you're already on a plus. It's true, you know. And
I am running two different detachments. So
yeah, and yeah, all those kind of bits. And so we decided to make that very generous because 1,000 points is very small for 30k.
Yeah, yeah. Basically, combat patrol.
Yeah, it's very small.
How many models you got in 1,000 points?
I think I have 26 and 2 vehicles.
Okay.
I think
not much. Then.
No, no. Your knight list will probably walk through it, but I don't care.
Yeah. Don't be like that.
Well, yeah. thinking of the unit selection.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's maybe, you know, 3 melter bombs across the squads. Like, it's not like I have any squads that are full of melter bombs or melter guns.
So there's just
well, they're going to be in the squad, but it doesn't really matter when you're putting templates and blasts everywhere.
So only 2 templates. For my first 2, if I did it, it would probably be the HQ and then one.
Probably the errant.
Probably the errant.
Just something different.
Variety.
Just something different.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'll be really fun. Like, I'm really looking forward to it. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But yeah, the 1,000 points is always going to be a bit skirmishy, a bit of fun, just to get us into it.
And I'll be playing like 200 points down, because I think my list is like 800 points.
Yeah, I mean, some of the Thalax could come across, but anyway, we're getting ahead of ourselves. Where were we? Have you finished your game?
Yep, that's it.
Cool.
I think break.
Yeah, I think we'll take a break and we'll come back with Pain and Joy 40K.
Oh, hey there. I didn't see you guys come in. Who am I? I'm Sam from the Adeptus Terra podcast. What am I doing here? Well, I'm here to tell you that you need to send me and Matt your pain and joys. Feel free to message us on Facebook, which is the Adeptus Terra podcast. That's message, don't post. Or send us an email at theadeptusterrapodcast@gmail.com. Stay sharp.
Welcome back to our second segment, Pain and Joy of 40K. Yeah, you're Sam. Yeah. Yeah, and I'm not Sam. No. So we're going to start with paints as normal and then go on to brighter things in our joys. As normal, we've got a listener pain and joys that we're going to talk about. The backlog's starting to dry up a little bit. We've started to feel, I think, next episode's already full. But after that, we've starting to dwindle a little bit. So it'd be really cool to get your pain and joys in, even if you've been on the show before. Or if you're brand new to it, email us. Send us a Facebook message. We ask for that because we don't want comments and people talking about it before we talk about it on the show.
Cool. Listen to the advert.
But yeah, go for it. There's an advert somewhere in the show that will explain more in Sam's awesome way.
I am Alfurious.
Yeah, ways of doing things. That should be one of our new adverts.
What?
Anyway.
I am Alfurious.
I am Alfurious.
One guy, I'm Omegron.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't forget me. Anyway. So on to pains. My pain is really a reflection. So it's not me moaning about things or finding it a real difficulty.
So now
it's
the
more,
year is coming to an end. We reflect upon our life for the last
year. Yeah, it's the time of Advent, which is about reflecting towards Christmas.
Oh, God, that sounded like you were just back at work.
Yeah, but, you know, so Advent, here we are. This is my Advent reflection. So I really kind of, I guess, I put it in pain because it's a struggle for me right now.
Yeah.
But it's basically that as my hobby has progressed, I've got into a more expensive taste and a more expensive need for items.
Yeah.
So what I mean by that is when we start out, you know, I remember picking up a Space Wolf Battle Force box and building that and playing small games with that and then gradually bolting on a unit, a tank.
How many Battle Force boxes do you have?
I went through 4 in the end.
Jeez.
Yeah. I needed the drop pods. The Space Wolf one came with a drop pod rather than a rhino.
Okay, yeah.
So that gave me 4 out of the 5 drop pods I have in my army, which was useful. Yeah. It gave me a ton of scouts that I think I've eventually sold off in time. But but some of them are still in my army.
Many years ago, that was.
But yeah, you know, so Battle Force was the biggest thing I ever purchased for a long time.
70 quid?
I think they were like 50 back then. They genuinely, yeah, 4 or 5 years ago now, must be.
Spent that on some scenery, didn't
they? Yeah, on one thing. I spent double that on one thing. That's the crazy thing. But yeah, you know.
Stop reflecting.
Yeah, so, you know, hobby increases and builds, and it should do, and that's awesome. And I guess my pain isn't about that. My pain is about, you know, I'm at a place now where I've got my own hobby space, place where I can game at home, so I need a table. I want shelves up so I can store my things. I've got cases to travel around with my armies. Whereas I remember before, we were just putting them in...
boxes.
Shoe boxes.
Oh,
no. Yeah, and we're just... Yeah. You know, and you grow out of that stuff, and you should. You know, you should move towards that, getting cased and protecting your models that you're investing in. And I'm really happy that I've been able to progress that level.
Yeah.
You know, looking at doing a 30K all Forge World army with maybe some Betrayal of Kalth thrown in is an expensive thing. And I know that leads into your pain, so we won't go into that just yet. But is something I never thought I would do. You know, I remember buying the Fire Raptor that I bought 2 years ago at Salute and can't believe that I was spending that much money on a model. And since then, I've bought a Barbed Hierodor, a Dema Charon. You know, I've spent large amount of money on single units. And that felt like a natural progression, which is great. The only pain part, I guess, and the only thing I'm kind of getting to is I really can't afford that right now. So I really want my gaming table up and running so I can have games at home.
Yeah.
And just have things set up. And if need be, have a game go over a couple of weeks, because that's fine. I can just lock the door and leave it going.
I do want my game... Like, we were talking about gaming spaces.
Yes.
And actually, she was just like, you need to wait. It's not going to be something we're going to do straight away.
Yeah.
I was thinking, it's probably going to be something I do straight away.
Yeah.
Measuring up, getting everything ready, drawing up designs. Because I want that space. I want that space to be able to store my stuff in, and two, have that freedom to game at home again. I miss that gaming at home. Like,
yeah, I mean, I can still do that. Like, I've got more space than ever to do that at home. But it's just, you know, getting it out, being conscientious of all that stuff that's everywhere, putting it all away at the end of the night so, you know, Caleb can't get hold of it, which will get harder and harder as he starts moving around.
Yeah.
Having that space that will just be left alone, can be locked up, will be secure, is brilliant, and I'm so excited for it. But I haven't got the money to invest in it.
No.
And I kind of look back at the simpler times when I was at my mum and dad's and it was a shoebox and that was my whole army, and just think, oh, it was much simpler and easier then, you know? And I'm so happy and excited and love where I am at with the hobby, you know, looking at Forge World Army and 30K and having my 3 40K armies and now having my own gaming space. It's like a dream come true. But just being able to afford it all and get it running and get it done to a decent standard that I'm happy with is quite difficult financially. So I think that's my just general pain and reflection that, you know, I've got to invest a lot of money to get that where I want to be.
Yeah.
Although I'm more than willing to do that and excited to do that, I can't quite do it, and that's frustrating. And I think that's my pain, really.
Mine's the fact that I'm going to be doing a Forge World Army. I always said that I didn't want to do a Forge World Army, and I'm kind of getting the best of both worlds by not doing 100% and going knights from Games Workshop and
buying
a standard knights. However, we're still talking 285 for the 3 standard knights.
Yeah,
140 for one of the Forge World ones.
Are they 175?
Oh, one of them then. 175.
I'm sure they're 175.
So you're talking 285. 175.
Yeah, it's an expensive army.
Plus, I think for my Thalax,
yeah,
thirty quid a pop.
Yeah,
So you're talking 60 quid for them. The Castellax are 38 quid each.
So 70 quid a unit.
70 quid a unit for them, and then the Dominus is actually only 20 quid. But
that's not bad.
But it's just the fact that it's going to cost me a lot of money. Not as much necessarily as if I did a Space Marine. Legion?
Yes, it depends. So
it depends how you do it. If you do, so like,
I've looked at mine, and I can do it with that box set.
Yeah.
It roughly works out about 350.
Yeah.
So which is probably about half of yours.
Yeah, and it will be cheaper because I'll buy from third parties. So
yeah,
I'll buy the knights. You've looked at the Dark Sphere.
You've looked at that. Can't remember. Raging Heroes. Magos model.
Yeah, yeah.
That looks quite cool, having a woman. Yeah. Could be so interesting.
So there will be third-party buying going on. And because I'm only doing two nights for my first 1,000 points, that's actually only going to be like 180 quid max for my first increase.
Yeah.
So whilst that's not necessarily a bad thing, obviously it's quite expensive, but it's not awful. It's not like I'm going to have to go and spend £200 to start with.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Again, I started looking at, now I've broken my list into three bits and I know this is what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I've got to spend most of my 350 in that first 1,000 points.
Right.
And after that, because of betrayal and the kind of units that I can use, I've got the units for later on.
Yeah.
So I don't need to buy that unit. I just need to paint that unit up because I already bought it in that box set.
So we're talking £845.
So yeah, £845 is a lot of money.
£845.
But it's stretched out over time and, you know,
I can justify it. Yeah. It's not like I'm going, I'm never going to do it.
Yeah.
And eventually, like, I'm doing little things to not have the impact. So like any money I get, putting it into a pot, selling 40K stuff that I don't use anymore. So it will be off balance. But it's just the fact of, man, this is going to be an expensive venture. Basically, it's a bit of a bummer that I'm going to have to do a knight army and cost a lot of money.
It's not really.
3,000 points for transferable into 40K. It will bring me many days of joy.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you're not sitting here moaning that you're going to do something that you enjoy.
No.
That's not the point. I think it's more just highlighting that as a fact that it's going to happen and that can be painful.
I think, and actually, if you look at it in terms of another way, I was talking to a guy at work. I don't go out and drink. I don't do drugs. I don't spend my money on anything else. So I might as well spend it on plastic crack.
On something you enjoy.
On something I enjoy doing. So I'm cool with it. It's just one of those things where it's a forward army, so it's going
to
be...
I think it's always harder before you start a project to start, like, you know, you could sit there and look at your orc army and actually it's probably not that much different.
I'm going to ignore the orc army for now.
Yeah, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know? So yeah, that'll be an interesting one. I think just when you're looking at a project and you think, blimey, this is going to cost me a lot of money. Can I afford it? Is it worth it? What am I going to get out of it? All those things you need to think about.
Yeah.
I think people rush into doing projects and then end up, you know, either selling it off or just stopping and putting it away until further years.
No. And if I buy a knight every 6 months, we're talking £10 a month. No.
Yeah, well.
£20 a month?
Yeah, something like that. It's not.
£25 a month?
it's not that bad.
No,
it's not that bad.
It's not. It really isn't. And I'd probably spend more on Monster than I do on that. So
yeah.
If I stop drinking Monster.
Yeah, you'd be fine.
I'd be fine.
Yeah. Yeah. That could be a year commitment.
No.
All right, fair enough.
Never.
Shall we move on to joys?
Yeah, go on to joy.
Cool.
Go on.
So my joy is list building apps. So for me, that's Quartermaster.
Cool.
So that's what I use. I find them just unbelievably reliable, actually. Like, I don't find any I can only talk about Quartermaster because that's all I use. There are others out there. I know lots of people use Battlescribe and love it. I'm not as great with that interface. I was talking to Neil and Simon about this, actually, who I love Battlescribe and prefer it to Quartermaster, and I find Quartermaster much more like Apple software, where it's very simple to use and it gives you all the information, it does everything it needs to and does it really well. It's just clean and easy to read, and I find Battlescribe very cluttered and difficult, or much more difficult than Quartermaster.
It's one of those each to their own things. Like,
yeah,
I think
completely.
Battlescribe has the advantage over Quartermaster that it provides you what the rules are. So in like a...
it tells you like gun profiles and things.
Yeah, so that kind of... I'd find that more helpful for in-game, like having a quick reference style sheet.
Yeah, I guess I use my codexes or just know them because I've got one of those kind of memories. I know a lot of that profiling.
See, I'm forgetful at the best of...
So... Bad joke.
Oh,
bad
times.
Joke.
Time. We're going for the best of
but,
times.
You know, for me, it's Quartermaster. And I think what highlighted that as my joy this month is, you know, I've spent months and months and months doing this 30K Night Lords list.
Yeah.
And I've been using Quartermaster. And I've built it and built it and built it. And then when Salamander Tom, or I Am Alpharius Tom, or soon to be, he's doing Alpha Legion.
Oh, okay. He's actually
going to do it. Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be really awesome. And he'd been writing lists just through notes on his iPad,
right?
Using the books and writing them down like you would on paper, but just using an iPad.
Yeah.
The only problem with that is his maths is atrocious.
Right.
So I went through his list and went, oh, you realise you haven't added this on, or you've added too much of this.
Yeah.
So his lists were never quite at the right points level.
Yeah.
And until we sat down and wrote all his lists up onto my iPad and then whittled them down and rewrote lists and copied them and changed bits, and within a night we had written his 3,000 points.
Yeah.
And he was really happy with it and included everything he wanted. Like, I just let him use the app because he didn't have it.
Yeah.
And since then, he's actually bought the app.
Cool.
So he now has Quartermaster.
See, we should so be sponsored.
And I just find it so much easier. It's good to look up during games just to see what your list is, to remind you when you're deploying, to make sure you don't leave that one lictor or whatever in your case.
Tom always leaves tanks at home.
Yeah, that sometimes happens. And I just find it really, really useful for making lists. You don't have to worry about the points because it does all the maths for you. All the information's there. As long as you're doing your research and your reading, you can use them really well. It's not a substitute for a codex, but it helps alongside the codex. It's like a companion, and it keeps all your lists. You save them. You don't have to worry about losing the bit of paper or, you know, I broke my iPhone recently. Well, and
didn't break it, you shut it in a door.
Yeah, it was pretty brutal.
It was bent in half.
Anyway, it doesn't matter, it broke. And the fact is, if my lists were only in my notes or only on documents on that phone, they weren't synced with each other and all of that, I would have lost them. But with this, you know, it's cross-platform, I can have them anywhere. You know, I've sat in meetings and in between meetings when I'm mentoring some of the kids in the local school. And, you know, while I'm waiting for them to attend, I can quickly just spend 5-10 minutes looking at lists, making changes, planning a list to face someone at the bunker. Just really, really useful. Whereas you couldn't do that with pen and paper as easy. You know, it's not non-doable.
Look at me, I found one of my notebooks the other day with all my paper lists in them before the age of Battlescribe.
Tablets, yeah.
Yeah, it was awesome.
It's really cool.
And, like, looking at all the things, I never pointed that right.
It's really cool, but that happens, you know. If you're using your own mental arithmetic or you're even using a calculator but you hit the wrong button, you can mess up very easily.
And apps
fix that for you because it does it all for you. As long as you're confident that the points in them are right.
That's the only other thing.
Which I have checked.
I have seen before points not being right.
Yeah, that was
but
a long
a lot
time ago.
Now, a lot, better, a lot yeah, that was. Now.
They're moderated very well nowadays.
Yeah.
I think when we first got Quartermaster, there was three or four different versions of the Blood Angel Codex.
Yeah, yeah.
Because people were putting their own spin on and just including the units they ran or had or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And sometimes they'd be wrong, but now they're central and they're moderated and they're accurate. So I find it really useful for that. But also, if you're making lists on paper or even using electronic note-taking ways, formulas, whatever, you need a codex next to you. You need all your books next to you to do that, where the points are. Whereas everything is on that app. So that's literally all you need. You might need to go back afterwards and double-check things in the codex, like special rules, like do I want to run that unit? You know, so when I'm at home, I've got take the Night Lords, for example. I've had the red books out in front of me with, you know, the Night Lords Legion rules and the regular Crusade Army lists and going through units and doing that at home.
Yeah.
But then in between that, when I'm on the move, when I've got a break at work, when I'm doing things, I can just pick up my iPad, go to Quartermaster, remember what I've read the night before, and just edit lists. And I just find it so useful and so helpful.
Yeah.
I really encourage people to give them a go if they never have. I think Battlescribe's free. I think you can get a free version with adverts.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can upgrade that if you think it's brilliant. Quartermaster, it seems very expensive.
$7.99?
I think it's $6.50.
Okay.
It's something around there. It's been a while.
Yeah.
We've had it for quite a while. You get access to all those templates. As soon as you pay that money, you've got access to any army you want. And then you can just make lists for days.
And you can load multiple platforms as well. So you can load 30K, 40K.
Yeah, so I've got 40K and 30K on there. I haven't got the fantasy that's on there. There's X-Wing. There's all sorts of other games on there.
Okay.
So, yeah, I just really recommend them. Think they're awesome, and that's why it's my joy.
Cool. cool.
What about yours?
My joy is, as some of you may or may not know, I listen to a lot of podcasts.
Yes.
Lots of different podcasts. And obviously, there's been a void in my life of the Overlords.
In lots of people's lives.
In lots of people's lives, yeah, of the Overlords, because they haven't been able to publish an episode due to some issues.
Yeah, technical issues.
Technical issues. So we reached out to them when we heard about them and basically was like, do you guys want to maybe host an episode on our feed just to kind of get an episode out?
Yeah.
And they contacted us with the issues they were having. I tried to help with them.
I think it worked.
it wasn't just stuff I was doing. I was kind of just looking at the issue from an outside, not getting caught up in what was going on, and posed some reasonable things they can be doing to make it a little bit better, to overcome the issue.
Yeah.
And it seems to have worked. I haven't actually caught up with Jason to see what the actual outcome was of
what he did. Yeah, you should probably find out.
Yeah, I think it was something to do with the iTunes feed and the RSS feed.
Yes.
But now they're republishing again, so that's cool. It's really awesome.
So awesome.
I think
so
you need
awesome.
To resubscribe in order to do it, or unsubscribe and resubscribe to get it.
Yeah, I had to do that.
But that's my joy. They're back.
Yeah, I mean, for us, the Overlords were, if not the reason for us to even start this podcast.
Yes.
Really, it was, you know, the Overlords were what, one of the first podcasts you started listening to?
Yep.
Was the first podcast you recommended to me.
Yeah.
And then we moved on to the ICs as well as the Overlords, and then Master of the Forge came out from, you know, Deep Strike Radio and that kind of era.
Yeah.
Those three podcasts, I would say, are kind of our real drive and inspiration.
Yeah.
And there's so many more out there that are awesome that we love.
Yeah.
But they're really the kind of the core three. And to be able to help, well, I just kind of sat there and pretended to help, and Sam did all the work to help them out and to just be part of that community and support them, because they've encouraged us and inspired us, was awesome.
We should call ourselves the UK Alliance.
Yeah. Take on all those American podcass.
Yeah. South Coast or East Coast Alliance, haven't they?
East Coast, West Coast, something. I don't know.
Something Alliance. Anyway.
Don't know. We love you guys. We're just clowning around.
It's good that they're back and publishing. Hopefully we'll be regularly releasing. So that's cool. That's my joy.
Yeah.
Listener Pain and Joys?
Yeah.
So if I go through Jacob's Pain?
Yeah, do it.
So Jacob's Pain is not having the will to paint or model since I'm somewhat unable to play due to work, a long commute, and the nearest club being almost an hour away. Also, I tend to bite off more than I can chew with conversions and have nearly destroyed quite a few models trying to convert beyond my ability.
Definitely done that.
It all adds to a lack of desire to my work on my models. I chopped off too much of an apothecary, a Sangreal New Priest, and had to model it back together.
I think I remember doing that.
Oh, it was awful. It was truly awful.
Yeah.
But it happens. It's I agree. Like, it, where I do like an hour and a half commute one way, so 3 hours worth of commute backwards and forwards. I agree. I think it's one of those things which you just have to power through with 40K.
Yeah, I think there's, you know, depending on what that commute is like, whether that's car or bus or train, we're not sure. But yeah. I think for me, I would use that time to maybe listen to podcasts, read a novel to inspire you.
Book if you can't read on the train.
Yeah,
or
yeah,
like
yeah.
That.
There's lots of things like that. Just to keep yourself in the hobby.
Yeah.
And then you'll probably find that drives you. Like, I love listening to, you know, we've already mentioned them, the Overlords, but other podcasts as well, when I'm hobbying. And that seems to keep me painting. Like, I really struggle with that painting side of things.
Yeah.
I'm always happy to build stuff, and I'm always happy to have games when I can fit them in. But painting is something I really have to make myself do. And I find podcasts as a way of motivating me and keeping me painting once I've started. They're just the only little kind of suggestions I can think of. I don't do a long commute, but they're the things that I think I would try and do just to keep myself motivated if I knew I was struggling. I think we all go through that kind of burnout and that struggle. I've definitely cut off more than I can chew and really struggled with conversions before. And sometimes I've saved them and sometimes I've wrecked models. Genuinely, not that many, but a couple.
Yeah.
And you pay the price for it, but ultimately, if you learn a lesson from that, it might be still worth it. Yeah, it depends on whether that's a £90 kit or a single tap marine in a 10-man squad.
Yeah.
It kind of depends. I think we all get that kind of burnout and that struggle. Just keep going, man. Keep going.
Keep on chugging. So Jacob's joy. Jacob's Joy, the JJ, would be theory hammering, since it's the closest thing I can get to playing. Trying to make my Iron Hands chapter the disciples of Iron fluffy, yet competitive, is enjoyable, and I've been working on my list for months. I think I have the list down and created some fluff to go with it. I paid for Battlescribe app so I can name and give descriptions to my saved units. So
there
another,
you go.
Another.
You can do that in Quartermaster too.
Yep.
Putting that out there. Putting another flag in the ground for Quartermaster.
You're really fighting for this sponsorship, aren't you?
Yeah, yeah. I want Quartermaster sponsorship. They can give me my £6.50 back. No.
But yeah, so that's his joy, theory hammering. I'm not smart enough to kind of theory hammer.
Yeah, I guess it for me, it comes down to what that is. So I love writing lists, you know, and doing exactly that, making a fluffy list that makes sense to me, that is how I want to theme my force, whether that's for one game or an entire list, for, you know, all games. And I like working out, you know, okay, this unit has a good effect against this unit, and so I need another unit that does this, and that kind of level of theory hammering. When you get to that level where you're starting to kind of math hammer,
yeah,
and I don't think that's what he's talking about, but when that's where I fall down and I think, oh, I'm not, I can't be bothered.
Yeah,
and I don't think that's what the game's really about.
No.
But I love theory hammering and working out how this list will work well together and have synergy and will fight well against, you know, a chosen opposition or all oppositions. So yeah, I mean, I think that's, you know, little things come out of that, like my Grey Hunter squads in drop pods have either two melters or two flamers because they come down for a specific reason, whereas you, Sam, always used to do one melter, one flamer.
Oh, it's because, you know? I can do multiple things with one squad.
Yeah, but yeah, whereas for me, my theory is that squad has a desired target and is to achieve that target, so that's what it goes for. And it's not that I'm trying to argue that that's better than your way of doing things, but that came through a lot of theory, thought and how I want to play my army.
I was going to say, well, who got tabled last, but we both did.
So. Yeah, yeah, it doesn't work. but yeah, that theory hammering and making a list work and feel right and fluffy as well as being strong, I love that side of things. So yeah, I can really see that being a joy, especially if you can't game.
Yeah.
Like you say, that's the closest you can get to kind of having a game.
Yeah.
And then when you get to play that game, all that theory hammering really works out and you see it happen and it's awesome, hopefully. Mm. Obviously, it's still a dice game. It doesn't matter how much you math hammer, how much you theory hammer, you can always roll ones.
Yeah.
Or sixes for leaderships.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that's an awesome joy. So yeah, moving on to Ben's pain and joy. So
this isn't our Ben.
No.
Or everything Ben.
No.
Oh, because he lives in Australia.
Yeah. Okay. There you go. Well done. You got the hint there. So his pain is one that I definitely understand but haven't experienced because we live in the homeland as it is.
The pride land, the motherland.
Yeah, the motherland. But yeah, so Ben is the price of hobby products in Australia.
Oh man, I feel for you.
Yeah, he says it kind of sucks to get miniatures, terrain and even third-party parts with shipping to here. So, obviously, to Australia.
Well, there's only 4 months to salute, Ben, so why don't you come over?
Yeah, fly out. Yeah.
We'll have a beer. We can load you up with 40k crack and then send you back.
Yeah. Yeah, if you flew over, I'd buy you a box of Marines or whatever army you want, of standard troops. I would generally do that.
If he flew over,
I would do that.
Ben, do it, because he's tight, so just come down.
Just for that, yeah.
just
for that 10 Marines.
You pay your £1,000 ticket to get
here. Yeah. I mean, I once met a guy in Warhammer World when we were up for our doubles tournament in 5th Ed, and he was Australian, and I was chatting to him, and he said, because he got a cheap flight, I don't know whether he had, you know, flyer miles or got a really good deal because the plane was half empty don't know, but he got a cheap flight, as cheap as you can get, to the UK, flew over, went to Warhammer World for the day to see it because he'd never been, bought a ton of Warhammer, basically brought an empty suitcase with him, filled it full of Warhammer for him and his friends and his gaming group, and then flew back the next day. And that was cheaper than buying the same amount of stuff he bought in Australia.
Jeez.
How crazy is that?
What is their cost? Oh, I wonder now.
No, it's insane. Right. It is insane. Literally, absolutely mental. I feel like it's like double. Or something.
Right.
I don't think it's that bad, but it is high. And yeah, I fully feel for you guys in Australia. And do you know what? Some of the best and most passionate hobbyists come out of Australia. Like, genuinely, they really do. And I just admire you guys, because I think I'd really struggle to keep motivated when things cost that much.
Yeah, you have to really kind of love the hobby.
Yeah, I think you probably have. There's probably a really solid base. But
the 185 quid for a night.
Well, that's Australian dollars, isn't
it? $185 for an Australia for a night.
Yeah,
that's so much money.
It's nearly double.
Oh my god!
Depending on the exchange rate.
Oh dear.
But yeah, crazy, isn't it? But yeah, I think you end up with a passionate core of people who are in it for the long haul and understand how awesome this hobby is. The problem is, he's trying to get new people into that hobby. It must be so hard in Australia. Can you imagine trying to go, yeah, hey, mate, come around and play this game. Cool. Oh, yeah, this is really fun. How do I start? All right, well, you've got to drop, you know, $600.
Yeah.
Just to have 1,000 points or something, yeah. You know. Yeah, it's just unreal. And that must just so suck.
Unless they get paid, like, $30 an hour.
Well, no, I have no clue about Australian life, to be honest, in that way. Like, maybe, I don't think it's like that, but yeah.
Ben, let us know where you live. We'll come out and visit you.
Blimey, that'd be awesome.
We should go to Adepticon first.
Yeah, we should probably go to Adepticon first. That'll be in 10 years' time. We'll come and see you.
We'll come see you in 10 years, Ben. If you're still in the hobby. If not, then feel free to send me all your Warhammer.
Yeah.
I'll pay shipping.
Oh, I don't know. That's part of the problem. I think that is the biggest problem, because I don't think there's that many, if any, Games Workshop stores in Australia.
They've just opened a new one. Oh, no, it's Perth, UK. So have you seen on the Warhammer app, they've started telling you when they open new stores?
Oh, okay. So that's cool.
I'll just have a look. But I think it was Perth, UK.
Yeah, it probably was.
But carry on.
But, you know, sure. just the fact that that was, yeah, well, no, just that, you know, shipping to that country must really suck. And I hope it gets better for you. I don't know how it would or why it would, but I really hope that it does. And just keep doing it, man. Like, you
know. There's a new store opening in Dunedin, New Zealand.
Okay, cool. That's a bit closer than the UK.
Yeah. Cambridge, they have a new store. Perth, UK.
Stop it. Stop it. Right, Joy.
Joyce, go.
So, yeah, Ben's Joy. So, on the flip side of models being really expensive, his Joy is finding a local gaming club and the upcoming Heresy Plastics getting him excited to start a Wordbearers 30K force. That's just him saying that he likes us, which is awesome. Thanks, Ben, for that. These plastic Heresy models have got us excited. Got lots of people excited. Yeah, I suppose not for you, Mechanicum.
When they bring out Mechanicum.
Yeah, right, you never know, it might be the next box.
Maybe.
But I guess a box like that must be gold dust to these guys.
Yeah.
Although it costs so much more than it does us, you still get the same worth in points.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've listened to the Eye of Horus podcast, which I know we've mentioned a couple of times recently, who do swear a ton. So if you're going to check them out, just there. If you don't mind that, go for it. If you're offended by that, then maybe not the podcast for you.
Yeah.
But their coverage of the Heresy is amazing and one of the best.
Learned so much about Knights.
Yeah, they're really good at what they do. And they broke down the box set. They had a whole episode on it, and I love listening to it. And this guy got about 2,500 points out of two boxes.
Right.
Which is a massive save.
180 quid for us.
Yeah, which is, you know, whatever crazy price for them, but it means it's feasible.
Yeah.
You know, can you imagine trying to buy Forge World at that exchange rate?
Oh, no. Not even looking.
Yeah. And Wordbearers is quite cool because you can ally in demons. So that's another way of saving that money.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think you know, getting into the Heresy is awesome. We're doing it and we're glad you're getting into it and finding a way that you can do that. And Games Workshop almost some, in a weird way, supplying you with a cheaper way of doing it, which is brilliant. Finding a local gaming club where you can game and meet people like-minded and maybe put in those big orders all together to save on that shipping is probably so important for guys in Australia.
For over 250 quid?
Maybe.
That'd be cool.
I don't know.
You would put the big orders in for that, wouldn't you?
Yeah, they do in America a lot. Carl always used to talk about it on the ICs, didn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
They always did it. So I'm assuming the same thing in Australia. They'd do very similar things.
Yeah.
Finding a gaming club just for that fact, let alone to find people who are like-minded and play games,
yeah.
You know, is almost the extra bonus.
Yeah.
That's an awesome Joy. Keep going, Ben. We really admire you and all those that are in Australia and doing this with this crazy high price range.
Just keep trucking.
Just keep going. And we'd love to see your models, so stick them up, especially your new Wordbearers when you get that going. Stick them up on our Facebook page. Get posting. We'd love to see your hobby progress. And that goes for any of you guys. So we're going to take a quick break and come back with our 40K Spotlight.
See you soon.
See you in a minute. Even his brother Primarchs understand little of him. His prowess with the blade earns him their respect, even as his waywardness causes them concern. Gulliman has never trusted him. Russ is exasperated by him. Lorgar despises him as an untortured savage. Only Horus sees him for what he truly is. They are kindred souls, those two. Warrior archetypes, bound by shared codes of martial honour and impatient with the heavy fetters of the Empire. And that was Chris Raitt with a quote about Jakati Khan, Primarch of the White Scars, who is our topic for our 40k Spotlight, our second Primarch that we've covered, which is quite cool. And we're just going to, yeah, like normal 40k Spotlight, go into the background, some history, go through the journey of what we have in the fluff, all the way up to the 41st millennium. And Jakati Khan is quite a cool one to do because up until this point, I don't think I really knew that much about him.
No, when you said this was the topic, I was like, who's Jen?
Really?
I thought it was like a chapter master or something like that. So it took me a little bit of research, and I haven't read the White Scars book or Scars.
Scars. Book. Scars was the first one. There are one or two now, I think.
Yeah.
No, Brotherhood of the Storm, which was a limited edition novella, was the first one.
Right.
Which hasn't reached us in normal release yet.
Okay.
Then they brought out Scars in a weird kind of episode online ebook.
Yeah.
And then they eventually released it in normal novel format.
So I haven't read that yet. Yeah. So it would be kind of it was kind of cool to read into it and kind of learn a bit more about him.
Yes. Some of the things we will talk about do maybe spoil books indirectly.
Yeah.
I haven't read all the things that we're talking about, and there was bits that I learnt that I'm sure are in heresy books.
Right, okay.
So just to put that out there right now, we're not commenting on any specific book, but this stuff is in some of the books.
Okay.
Just out there.
Awesome!
So I think we're going to start just by quickly reminding people that Jakati Khan, you can kind of tell by the name, is kind of based around Genghis Khan of the Mongols. He kind of was this conqueror who went around very fast, lightning strikes, hit and run strikes that, you know, were on horseback and were used to outmaneuver heavier armored soldiers at that time in history. And that's very much how we see the White Scars fight, especially in 41st millennium, yep. All on bikes, hit and run, I think is one of the special rules that they get if you take their chapter tactics. They're very much based off that Genghis Khan, Mongol, savagery, tribal type aesthetic as well as background.
Yeah.
So that's probably worth saying as we start off. And I think you're going to actually start us off, aren't you?
Yeah, so the early years and discovery by the Emperor, that's what I'm going to cover.
Cool.
Genghis Khan. It's not Genghis Khan. Jakati Khan. There we go.
Jakati Khan.
Jakati. Yep. Jakati Khan.
Ducati is not a bike.
Jakati Khan.
Ducati.
Oh, could he? Could he be? Could he be the 40k bike?
He's not a transformer.
That'd be awesome if he was. No. Anyway, Jakati Khan landed on Chogoris.
Chogoris. This is a difficult one. Chogoris. Yeah, let's call it that.
Chogoris. Or formerly known as Mundus Planus by the Imperium.
That's much easier.
Much easier. The planet is described as being a very fertile land.
Just seen your notes. That's
what?
Brilliant.
What?
Carry on. Oh, that made me laugh.
So the planet is described as being a very fertile land, green grass, tall mountains, very picturesque, deep blue sea, kind of like Essex.
Yeah, that's the bit that made me laugh.
Right, it is like Essex.
No.
It's green. There's a blue sea.
Yeah.
It might be painted on the side of the aquarium in Southend, but there is a blue sea in Essex.
There is a sea, yeah.
The planetary empires at the time, so the empire on that planet, are described as being in a black powder stage of development. So if you think back to, obviously, the history of our planet, the black powder stage is very much like musket.
So using
cannons,
black powder to blow stuff up.
Basically, yeah. That stage of development and well-equipped armies were fighting on horsemen, tight block fighting. So I imagine this like kind of, if you imagine The Last Samurai.
Yeah, all right.
So the Imperial army in that fighting against the samurai, they're very like formed and move as one big unit. Whereas that's kind of how they're fighting on this planet. The planetary dictator is called Palatine.
Yep.
I said that one right.
Yeah.
Palatine. Palatine was very evil. Very, very evil.
He would send
hunters into the grassland to basically hunt down and gather up slaves and basically for sport kill people.
Wow.
So he was a bit of an arse.
Yeah.
I can say arse.
Yeah, we determined that earlier. We could say arse.
We can say arse. So to the west of Palatine's land, to the empire, sorry, was a barren grassland. Had very little resources and basically no development. The main population of the grassland was wandering tribes who favoured horseback style fighting. So very vicious, fast, rapid assault, kind of like our friend Mr. Khan.
Yeah.
There was many infighting, civil war style fighting between the different tribes. They were just trying to take back their ancestral land. So if you imagine, like, basically consistent civil war between tribes, just little skirmishes here and there, nothing like all-out war, but kind of just trying to fight back to take back what's there, what they think is theirs.
Yeah, I think for them it's about that ancestral land, and our tribe had that 100 years ago, so we must take it back.
Yeah.
It's very similar to how the humans live on Fenris.
Yes.
So wandering tribes fighting for fertile land.
Yeah.
So they don't have that ancestral side of things, but very similar, nomadic tribes trying to find the best land to live in so their tribe can prosper and grow and then defeat other tribes in the future.
Yeah.
Very tribal, very feudal, lots of fighting. Yeah, no real unity.
No. So the norm at this time would be for Palatine to come in and take advantage of the infighting and the constant battles between the different tribes to take his slaves or to use the slaves as kill sport to take advantage of them. Khan was like all the other Primarchs and scattered from the Emperor, away from the Emperor as a child, and he was found by a guy called Ong Khan. I think the term Khan is the leader, how you define leader.
Yeah, that's where Genghis Khan comes from, as king.
Cool. He was the leader of a small tribe. The Khan of the tribe saw Jangeti as a gift from the gods and said that he had a fire in his eyes, which is a sign of a true warrior.
Yeah. He wasn't wrong.
No, not indeed. Ong was actually killed by a rival tribe called the Kuraid.
Yeah.
Khan. Okay, so this is where it's going to get a little bit confusing. From now on, I'm going to refer to Jaketi as Khan.
Yes.
Okay?
Yeah, well, the other dude just died, so we're all good.
Jaketi knew Khan. Okay, so Khan, as a young tribesman, was described as the greatest warrior in his tribe. He gathered troops and set out for revenge.
Big capital letters on revenge.
Oh, revenge! they took the Kurid camp. Killed all men, women, and children.
Oh, brutal.
Khan then took the head of the enemy leader and mounted it on his tent.
Yeah.
This was basically a sign of a mass victory of, I've killed the leader, therefore I will display his head as I'm rightfully taking over his tribe.
Yeah, I think, also that was a way of showing how ruthless you were.
Yeah.
You know, like, I killed everyone, I've cut off the leader's head, and now it displays on my tent. If you try and attack me or try and do anything to me, I'll do the same to you.
Yeah, basically.
You know, it's like when in England, when people were traitors to the crown, they had their head cut up and stuck on spikes in London.
Yeah.
To go, don't do this, otherwise this will be your head.
Absolutely. So it was said that this event of him, of Khan going after the Kurad, actually shaped Khan to be a man of honour, loyalty and ruthlessness. Khan vowed to end the fighting between different tribes and unite the people of the grasslands. At this point, I see in the movie Making of Khan a montage music of like the Eye of the Tiger. So it's the Eye of the Tiger.
Yeah, we know the song.
Anyway, that's basically on in the background as Khan is going through and crushing enemy tribes. Anyone that resisted was battered.
Yeah.
Anyone who gave up would join into Khan's tribe. And basically his tribe grew and grew and grew.
Yeah. This is basically what the Great Crusade was all about.
Yeah.
It's quite interesting. Like, it's like a dichotomy of that story.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, here's the imperial truth, join the Imperium. Oh, cool, you've decided to comply and be in compliance with us. Great, no one dies. Oh, you don't want to join us? Kill everyone.
And what Khan also did was basically take people from different tribes who had similar sets of beliefs and stuck them together to create like hybrid tribes, which would mean that there'd be less fighting and no inward fighting
makes
between
sense.
Each other. And
they're probably mating across tribes as well, because then you've got vested interest in the opposite tribe as well as your own.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Just, yeah. I'm sure he thought of that.
Yeah. And at this point, any time that Palantine sent in any hunting parties or to gather slaves, Khan would go and kill them all as a sign that you're not doing this anymore. That we are our own people. We don't rule. We're not ruled by you. Khan also made military service mandatory, and warriors were started to be promoted on their own merits and not their age.
Okay, yeah. So I imagine in tribes, you know, you have elders and those who are experienced. So they just naturally were the highest ranking people, whereas actually if you were young but had, you know, defeated a great warrior in battle, you were recognized for it.
Absolutely.
Again, very similar to how the Space Wolves human experiences before they become Space Wolves.
So now going forwards in time, about 10 summers as it's described, Khan's tribes move to their winter vacation spot.
Winter vacation.
Over the other side of
Let's go skiing.
It's the other side of the mountain, so it could be. So Khan was traveling on the side of a mountain with a group of his followers, and a vast avalanche pushed him and the group down the mountainside, and only Khan survived.
Yeah, makes sense. He's a Primarch.
When he came to, he was confronted by one of Palantine's hunting parties. Basically, he got a little bit angry with his hunting party.
Yeah.
I can imagine him because he lost loads of his friends in the avalanche. And all that arrived back in Palantine's palace was a mutilated soldier with the head of Palantine's son, where there was a note which, in summary, the clean version is, the people of the grassland are not your toys anymore. Leave us alone.
Okay.
The following spring, Palantine gathered a mighty army, which the planet had never seen before, like many, many dudes.
But all probably slaves.
All probably slaves. This is where I remember. This is where I look at like 300. Kind of.
Oh, okay. Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, yeah, but less death on the 300 side.
Well, yeah.
To gather this main army to wipe out the people of the grassland. He was basically.
He'd had enough. Yeah.
Because his son had been killed.
Yeah.
So Khan, lightly armored and swift warriors, managed to evade Palantine's heavily armored warriors for a long time, and basically draw them out. Khan returned attack was raining arrows down, which smashed the tightly ranked warriors of Palantine's army, basically killed the maximum amount of people.
Yeah, with a ton of arrows. Makes sense.
Yeah. Eventually, Khan crushed Palantine's army, and Palantine escaped, his bum being kicked with a group of his bodyguards back to the capital city.
Yep.
At this point, Khan went after him. So Khan was named by the all of the tribes as the Great Khan of the entire land.
Yep, so this is now King Khan.
King Khan. he then began to move towards the capital cities, going between all the different cities in between.
Yeah.
He conquered each one of them and gave them a choice, surrender or die.
Yeah.
Many surrendered, a lot died, but many surrendered, and they were just absorbed into Khan's army. And eventually, Khan got to Palantine's palace. Khan made the request, very gentlemanly, to the palace to give him Palantine's head on a spike, and the palace agreed. Khan has now got two heads on his tent.
So the first ever guy from the Curiad.
Yep.
And now Palantine himself.
Yep. 6 months later, the emperor appeared. Khan at once knew that this man could fulfill his dreams, which was to unite all the stars above them. In front of his generals, Khan dropped to one knee and pledged his service to the emperor. And
awesome.
Then he got absorbed into the Great Crusade, which is what you're going to be doing. You know,
so obviously, like the other Primarchs, he gets put in charge of his legion that used his kind of gene seed to build upon before they've even met him. And he absorbs those and uses great warriors from the world that he was on. What was the world again?
Magos Planum.
Yeah. Something like that.
Mundus Planus or Chogoris.
Chogoris, yeah. Mighty warriors from there, and they become part of the Legion as well. And then off you go to fight in the Great Crusade. And this is where we kind of pick up the story. So it's first off mentioning that during the heresy, Jakati Khan is seen wielding a Daco-shaped power sword. So this is like a scimitar, kind of Arabian style, very curved blade. You think of like a banana shape. kind of blade, like that kind of arc towards back towards yourself.
Okay.
So one of those kind of big ass blades, because it was for a Primarch.
Yeah.
And wearing a helm that resembled a snarling beast.
Good.
I thought this was pretty awesome. And I cannot wait to see that from Forge World. So we've got a definite while to wait for that one.
Yeah.
But, you know, seeing the blade.
See, considering I'm, I don't know how many books in now on the Horus Heresy, we've still not seen
five. They've done. Five books.
No, sorry. I mean, in terms of the Horus Heresy novel series.
Oh, right.
Like, I must be 11 or at least 11 in and not seen him. So I can't imagine they're going to come up anytime soon.
What do you mean?
Well, if they're following the linear...
No, they're not, are they? Because Prospero was before Isfahan 3, or during Isfahan 3.
Okay, good point.
And that's not happened yet.
No, okay.
We're supposed to see in the next book rules for the next three legions that are left, other than Thousand Suns and Space Wars. Mm-hmm. So the rules we'll probably see, but they've still got to do Alpharius, they've still got to do...
They're not going to do
various Primarchs.
I don't think they will. I don't think they will.
They will. They definitely will. Because I remember them releasing a statement saying sometimes Alpharius has to look like a Primarch. And that's the kind of model they're going to release.
Yeah.
So when, you know, when on parade or when whatever, so, you know, whether you decide that's Alpharius looking like a Primarch or not is up to you. But there will be a Primarch looking Alpharius. So they've pretty much made that statement. So I don't think they're just not going to.
Make a true Scout Marine.
It'll be interesting to see if they do either twin Primarchs.
Yeah.
There's only rules for Alpharius. Or if they bring out two models and have a model that you can put as your Primarch when he's hidden.
Yeah.
But then again, if he doesn't look exactly the same as all the others, he's not hidden.
No.
So I guess they won't do that. That's a silly idea.
Silly Matthew.
Yeah, but I can't wait to see this model of Jakati Khan with the snarling beast helmet. You know, like, I think Primarch faces are quite difficult because everyone sees them in a certain way.
Yeah.
So I know lots of people either like or dislike Fulgrim's face.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing a post recently on Facebook with someone saying, if you do Sanguinius with a face like Fulgrim's, I will punch you, Forge World. Or something like that, because they just really don't like it. It's too manic, too crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe that's what they wanted to represent in Fulgrim, because by that point he had kind of gone a bit manic and crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't think they will do that for Sanguinius.
No, but Sanguinius is beautiful.
It'll be interesting to see what they do. But, you know, if you've got an awesome helmeted version, I don't think they've really done that with a Primarch yet. And they're all just, here is their head. This is their face. There's no alternative heads.
No.
So it'd be really cool if this was the first Primarch where you have a potential head swap.
Yeah, yeah.
And you can either magnetize them, or if you only like one version, you can just glue that on. So that'd be really cool. But anyway, that's a side note. I just wanted to kind of put that out there, that this is kind of his fighting style. Big power sword, snarling helmet, probably looked quite scary on the battlefield, not just for being a Primarch, but just having that kind of armor, and probably carrying those two heads even now as skulls.
Yeah.
You know, on his belt or something.
That'd be cool.
Because they do like trophies and that kind of style. Not as crazy as the Night Lords, like skinning people and stuff. But they do have totems, similar, again, to the Space Wars. There's quite a lot of similarities.
Yeah.
So, like, for Space Wars, they have Rune Priests. For White Scars, can't remember what they're called, but they have like a priest that is their librarian. It has a special name. I think Storm Priests or Storm Callers or something like that. Storm Seers. Can't remember. But anyway, despite the fact that Horus felt that Khan was most likely to join him over all the remaining loyalist Primarchs, Jakati Khan, in fact, never intended to switch allegiances and stayed true to his father. That's quite an important thing to get out there straight away. It is worth noting that he did receive conflicting messages about what happened in the Isfahan system. So this is kind of the first part of the story that we hear about Jakati Khan. We don't know that much about the Crusade era for Jakati Khan. We don't really know where he was, what he was doing, how successful he was compared to the other legions. And he's obviously not involved in those opening conflicts because of where they were out in the galaxy, just far away from Isfahan. They were never going to get called to go.
Right.
And they got these conflicting messages, I'm guessing because the traitors were sending them conflicting messages as well as the loyalists, and they didn't know who to trust because they were not there. At this point, it's very, you know, unclear what's gone on, who's fallen, why has it happened, is this all lies, is this a trick, what is going on? So they were getting these conflicting messages. And they just decided initially, Jigati Khan said, right, we're going to hold back. We're going to stay in this sector of space and determine the true nature of things, which I think shows how much of a wise general he was. That he wasn't like, right, I'm a mad savage, let's go and kill everything.
Yeah.
He was like, right, I don't know what the truth is, so I'm going to stay back and you know, meditate on it and keep getting these reports and try and work out the truth, which is a very kind of level-headed approach, which we don't see in many of the Primarchs, to be honest.
Yeah.
There's not really that level approach. There's just this kind of, oh, traitor, go, 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 go. You know, Jigati Khan really wants all the facts before he makes a choice here. When Rogal Dorn sent a plea for all remaining loyalists to return to Terra, Khan followed suit. Khan followed suit, reluctantly leaving the nearby Space Wars to fend for themselves against the Alpha Legion. This is what the new Wolf King book's kind of about.
Yeah, yeah.
Which will be cool. And there's a few short stories, and this is an area that they're expanding currently in the Heresy. Mm. He also ignored calls by Horus to attack his brother, Leman Russ, which is interesting. That's part of Scars,
yeah,
right there. You see, while all this was happening, the Khan sought answers so that he could, you know, work out what was going on and what side to take in the conflict. Who was traitor? Who's actually fallen? Is it Horus, or is someone trying to frame Horus for it? So both loyalists and traitors were vying for his allegiance, like mainly the Alpha Legion, or so it was thought, and we'll get to that point in a moment, and Leman Russ are the Space Wolves, because they were in the same area of space after Prospero.
Yeah.
Kind of floating around, not really sure what to do next, and they kind of bump into the Scars, and and this conversation happens, because it becomes, it becomes fact that Horus has now fallen. So the interesting bit of this, and I've kind of highlighted it, and I got this from the Alpha Legion background,
right? Okay,
is that the Alpha Legion split off from the main body of Horus's forces early on and didn't attack Terra. That's something we know.
Yeah.
Instead, they were embarked upon a series of delaying actions in an attempt to hold Imperial reinforcements in place, notably the Dark Angels, a bit of the Ultramarines, and mainly the Space Wolves, to keep them back so that Terra couldn't be refortified. An example of this was attempting to block White Scars at the Chondak system.
Okay.
But Jigati Khan was able to maneuver out of their trap because he's kind of quite quick and wise, and that's kind of his type of warfare. So he kind of saw it coming. Alpharius, or Omegon's dubious agenda, comes to light at Chondrax. So this is a very interesting thing, and take it as you will. But where they were under orders from Horus to recruit the White Scars, instead the Alpha Legion fleet there engaged in hostile actions to seemingly provoke the Scars into a fight after blockading them long enough for them to get word from Rogal Dorn of Horus's treachery. Indeed, this message was only delivered because Omegon had dispatched forces to destroy a pylon array blocking the White Scars' communications. Thus, the Alpha Legion, or at least elements of it, made sure that Jigati Khan would most likely join the Emperor.
Oh, okay.
Really interesting. So this is where lots of people feel that if you've read Legion, this will make a bit of sense. Because at the end of Legion, the Alpha Legion decide, and this is a big spoiler, so haven't read Legion and don't know this, skip. But at the end, they choose to, what it seems like, fall to chaos for the Emperor. So what they do is for the Emperor, because they know the Emperor really wants to take over chaos, yada, yada, yada. You know, lots of detail in that book that I won't repeat. Because if you are listening and still haven't read it, you should go and read it. There are some people who think that possibly Alpharius went for this full ham and fell to chaos properly. And eventually by, you know, trying to outdo Horus but pretend to be on his side, Alpharius actually ends up on his side, whereas Omegaron doesn't.
So you don't really see this reflected in the latest Chaos Codex?
No, but at that point everyone's, yeah, this is 10,000 years into the future. This is them staying in the Eye of Terror.
Yeah.
And a lot of that Alpha Legion are not in the Eye of Terror. So if you really wanted to do a fluffy Alpha Legion, you'd have small units with no marks and no like demon princes or things like that, because they don't use them. No. Similar with Night Lords. A lot of the Night Lords detest chaos.
Right.
They're more like renegades. But some of them have fallen, and so you can do the demon-infested and corn-marked Night Lords and be fluffy.
Yeah.
But not all of them do that. And you can see that in Aaron Dembski-Bowden's 40K books.
Right.
The thing is, Alpha Legion are not really covered in 40K at all, like in their own books, from what I've seen. It would be interesting to see. But clearly, the Alpha Legion's loyalties are definitely twisted here. If you believe that they did it all so that Khan would join the Emperor and potentially help the Emperor defeat Horus, then what they chose to do at the end of Legion, either they were lying to the Cabal and were using this as an opportunity to protect and help the Emperor, or their mission and stuff has changed. I remember listening to After Ulanor, and Greg Dan hinted towards this, that actually the Cabal's opinion changes. That actually their original thing of Horus must win so that Chaos actually ultimately destroys itself through the human species imploding through this heresy. They seem to change their tack and change their plan. And maybe this is them contacting the Alpha Legion and saying, actually, no, we need to do this now. We're not really sure.
Yeah.
We don't know that detail, but it's definitely a bit weird.
Yeah.
You know, the Alpha Legion are definitely not just serving Horus here. Take that as you will, and theory all you like. but I just found that a really interesting point of that. But when Jakoti got out of that blockade and fought off the Alpha Legion and decided to stay loyal, he eventually made his way to the source of all these troubles and investigated it himself. He went to Prospero, because that was the closest area where, you know, marine-on-marine fighting had happened and was really kind of a spark of that heresy. And I think his psychers kind of said, go to Prospero, because Magnus was definitely involved and had that psychic kind of vibe going on. So he heads off to Prospero, and when he gets to Prospero, he finds, the Khan and his men find no clear answers or space walls that have been reported. He only finds ruins and ghosts of slain Thousand Sons. Mm. Eventually, however, the Khan is confronted by a projection of Magnus the Red. Magnus implored his brother and former friend to finally choose a side in the rebellion and discuss what both hoped to gain from the Great Crusade. But in the end, the Khan shattered the shade with his sword. Shortly after, Mortarion, Primarch of the Death Guard, also turns up on Prospero. So it's kind of cool. There's this ghost of Magnus talking with Khan, and he eventually destroys Magnus's shade with his sword, and then Mortarion turns up, so there's all these Primarchs involved, and basically finally tries to convince his brother to join them, to join the traitors and join Horus. Jakoti refused yet another offer, stating that while the Emperor is a tyrant, Horus had become a slave to the warp and had attempted to manipulate him to his own ends. And he clearly didn't like being manipulated.
No.
This time, the Khan's choice came to a duel. The two Primarchs battled fairly evenly, though Jakoti was faster and Mortarion had greater endurance. Eventually, when the White Scars and Death Guard fleets began to clash in space, Mortarion withdrew. Meanwhile, in space, the failure in Mortarion's plan became apparent. See, during this time on Prospero, the Khan was faced with an attempted pro-Horus coup by two of his own commanders. So this is, again, that legion, some of the loyalists that you just hear chose loyalty. Here are some guys that actually chose the other way. So Hasik Noyan Khan and Torgan Khan, it was those two guys that, you know, through their efforts, and a guy called Shiban Khan, were involved in this kind of coup up in space. And Shiban Khan stayed loyal to his Primarch and to the Emperor, and because of his efforts, the other two failed. See, the White Scars raced back to Terror at this point and were present during the siege of the Emperor's Palace. They recaptured one of the major spaceports from the traitors to half the reinforcements that they could land on the planet. It is said that the Khan was leading his warriors from on top of a razorback, a sight which became a tower that is even told in awe ever since. So here's a guy that, you know, there's this Horus coup while he's down on the planet fighting Mortarion. One of his generals, I think, sacrifices his own life, but stops the legion falling. Khan gets up there, says, right, no more messing about, no more answers, this is my choice, gets to Terra, and massively helps in that whole siege. And if he wasn't there, it could have been completely worse and Horace could have won, you know? Mm. And there's this whole thing of Jakarta Khan at the moment. Anyway, our story really is him making that decision. And I don't think we've yet had that Prospero bit. I haven't read Scars, so I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But I don't think we're up to that bit of his story yet, which would be really interesting seeing. There's not very many books where you get Primark versus Primark.
No.
Because it doesn't happen that often until right near the end.
Right.
When you've got Demon Primarchs versus Primarchs and stuff like that on the Battle of Terror. There's a couple of awesome encounters, but they don't tend to be all or nothing duels.
No.
So, yeah, it's quite a cool part. And then, you know, I think almost because of that Horus, pro-Horus coup out of his own men, Jakarta Khan's like, no, look, let's not mess about. Let's not get answers. Let's not stay in this area of space. Let's get back to Terra, where the Emperor is, and defend him.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he gets this resolve. And then, you know, like we read that they recapture that spaceport to stop, you know, more and more reinforcements coming down to the planet from the traitors. He, you know, goes to battle on top of a Razorback. It's crazy awesome. Maybe hanging on to the turret.
Yeah.
Let's go! With
riding,
sword.
Riding his horse.
Yeah, sword aloft in the air.
Yeah.
Just this awesome story. And that's kind of where we're up to with Khan. And I guess with the whole heresy, really, we don't have that much of what's coming after.
No.
In the Scouring. We have a little bit of post-heresy. And I think, yeah, you're going to go into that, aren't you?
Well, post-heresy... So in the years after the Horus heresy, the White Scars adopted the Codex Astartes.
Yeah, that's worth mentioning.
Just died.
Ah.
So in the years after the Horus heresy, the White Scars actually adopted the Codex Astartes.
Yeah.
The idea behind Robert Gilliman. Reboot! Robert Gilliman!
No, I've never heard it Scottish.
It makes sense, though.
Robot Girly Man.
Robot Girly Man. Robot Girly Man gave the White Scars the responsibility of securing the area surrounding their homeworld in the Ultimar Segmentum.
Yeah.
When Khan returned to
all right, dear.
Chogoris, they learned that their homeworld and its people had actually been targeted by numerous Dark Elder attacks, which within thousands of citizens... had been seized and turned into slaves.
Take off.
Very, very close to what happened originally in the openings of...
Yeah, I guess so, yeah. And he defeated the tyrant that was taking all of his people to be slaves, and now he comes back and finds out these new Xenos tyrants are taking all his people to be slaves.
So, cue Eye of the Tiger montage.
Yeah.
Basically, at this point, he began his own crusade against the Dark Elder.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yep, long sword and all. So Jakarta fought alongside the White Scars for 70 more years, but eventually he disappeared in 084.M31.
Yeah.
When he travelled to a region of space known as Maelstrom. Loads of warp storms, not good, people live there.
It's by the Badab section, so this is close to where, for those that know the kind of 40k fluff, where Hurin Blackheart ends up becoming Hurin Blackheart, and yeah, lots of cool chapters are involved in that. Civil War.
Yeah.
But that's much, many, 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 many years later.
Yeah, absolutely. So Jakarta, there we go. Jakarta, whatever. It is believed, but not confirmed, that Jakarta to have pursued the Dark Elder after the Battle of Kuril Sil 5 with his First Brotherhood. It is believed, but like I said, not confirmed, that he actually went into the warp gate and into the webways to chase them and them down. It is rumoured that the Great Khan will once return. It is rumoured that the Great Khan will return once the hunt is complete and lead his warriors to unify the galaxy once again.
Yeah.
Once
again's a bit rich. It was never really unified. But anyway.
But no, it's more about he's going back to lead them once again to try and unify the galaxy.
Because
that was obviously his great dream, looking up at the stars and trying to unify it all. So theories, where Khan is now.
Okay.
My theory... is he's dead in the back of the closet at GWHQ, waiting for the end time for 40k. Next to the lion, Gulliman, and all the other Primarchs that are probably
that
still
are
alive.
Kind of somewhere.
The possibilities, basically, are either he went into the webway, died.
Yeah.
Went into the webway, fighting Dark Elder, but it hasn't resurfaced. It's not that difficult like, if he's gone after someone, you wouldn't...
Well, I don't know. If you don't know how to use the webway, you could get stuck in it quite easy.
Yeah, it could be that. He's lost in the webway is another theory of mine. He's fighting Dark Elder in the webway on Craftworlds.
Yeah.
Or he's chilling in the Black Library Hotel and Spa Resort.
For me, the one idea and kind of theory that I have is that... he is actually got captured and he's on Komora.
Okay.
So the background of the Dark Elder is that they torture their victims and their slaves so that they can hold off Slaanesh.
Okay.
Now, if you've got a being, if you can capture him, tie him up, who can take crazy amount of damage and heal.
Basically, they need Vulcan.
Vulcan would be the best.
Yeah.
But... any Primarch has ridiculously fast healing and can heal from virtually death blows.
Yeah.
Virtually. If you can tie him up and just torture him forever, you're pretty much going to never fall to Slaanesh.
No.
And there's a bit of background, and I can't remember if it's in the Dark Elder Codex or hinted in a book, but I remember hearing it, and this is where the theory kind of came from, that there is an immortal-type space marine of space marine physique in the deepest vaults of Komora, keeping away Slaanesh from the Archons, from the leaders of the Dark Elder.
Okay.
And if that's Chakuti Khan, who's a Primarch, you know, let's face it, he might be there for 10,000 years. One, it's in the webway, so time travels much differently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, who knows, that could feel like 20 years, who knows? But also, he could be just planning his escape and waiting and waiting and waiting. Just
twiddling his thumbs.
Yeah, well, just planning it and planning it and planning it. They're master tacticians, waiting for something to happen, either to the Dark Elder or an attack on Komora, that, you know, either from demons or from space marines, because that has happened before.
Yeah.
Or from something else, something happening that means he's got an escape route. And then you could see his return.
Riding on a Razorback.
Yeah. Yeah, somehow, or riding on a Razorback through the webway. That reminds me of, what is it? See this monkey riding on a Segway, or whatever that song is. A YouTube video from years ago. But anyway.
The birth of the internet.
Yeah.
When Matt was young.
Yes, it corrupted me, that video. But yeah, I like the idea of him being held there for their own means, but could someday potentially break out. Not that I don't think they'd ever get to that point and write that stuff in.
Yeah.
But that possibility and being there
40K is quite times. Cool.
Yeah, I don't think they'll ever do it. But anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's one theory I've heard. It's not watertight. It's not mentioned by name. It's not definite. But that's I think, most likely. Dark Elder using him to stave off Slaanesh. And one day he may break out and join them for the Great Hunt, similar to some of the other Loyalist Primarchs that are missing. But yeah. That was a cool segment.
Awesome.
I think we'll take a break and come back with our last segment, Life in the Hobby.
Hey guys, Sam here from the Adeptus Terra podcast. I'd like to take this opportunity to advertise you guys, actually. If you want to get in contact with us to advertise any gaming groups, Facebook pages, any other podcast, anything to do with 40K and the hobby, then just drop us an email on the AdeptusTerrorPodcast@gmail.com. That's the AdeptusTerrorPodcast@gmail.com. We'd be happy to have that conversation with you and hopefully get an advert going out for you. Thanks. See you soon.
Welcome back. This is Life in the Hobby, our last segment of the show today. And this episode, we're looking at different ways of making models stand out from the crowd.
Cool.
So, yeah, the kind of different areas we're looking at are single models, units in an overall army, like that centerpiece unit, and army-wide ideas to make your army stand up against other peoples of the same race or chapter, just to give you that edge on someone so it doesn't just look like a repeat, but your own flavour and your own taste within the background and within realistic thought, I guess.
Yeah.
How to make that model that tiny bit different.
Yeah.
You know, hopefully in your opinion, better, because, you know, we should all think our models converted the way they are as best as we can achieve. And yeah, just talk about ways roughly around those segments and how we're going to do that. Do you want to start with single models?
Yeah, so single models, making them stand out from the crowd. For me, a lot of it will be using third-party models. Models that you're not necessarily seeing on the board. So, for instance, I've got... single model? I don't know if I have one, actually.
Yeah, you talked about third-party, but I don't know if you have any.
No, I must have one. So, for instance, okay, look at my Inquisition Force.
Yeah, that's a whole force.
So that's a whole force of third-party models. However, I've got that one Forge World model, which, okay...
isn't third-party, but second-party model?
It's a second-party model. you don't always see Forge World models in a normal 40k game.
Yep, true.
Always. So, but having that one standout model who's quite big on a base and very grand pose, it stands out from the rest of the army. And it helps that the colour scheme I've used the rest of the army is like greys, and his colour scheme is gold.
Yeah, gold and silvers and brass. And
using the colours, the pose he's in, the type of model he is, he's very... grand.
Yeah, I think I've got a lot of these kind of third-party models. So the Commissar and my Scions.
Yep.
My Orc Painboy is a third-party model and stands out quite a lot from the crowd.
Yep.
I think they're the only two, really. But, I think third-party is definitely a great place to look when you're planning a list and you've got that one model, and although you could convert it up out of Games Workshop stuff, or it has its own model, but you see it all the time.
Yeah.
So like the Terminator Chaplain, for example, from Games Workshop. Great model, really like it. Can look amazing, painted up really well, but he's always in the same pose and looks very similar. You know, once you see a black Terminator, you've seen a black Terminator with a skull helmet.
And I think as well, it's not even just about using third-party models. So if you look at my Death Corps of Krieg, one, the Death Corps of Krieg from Forge World, but also I've got the Quartermaster model in there for a sergeant, which is very different to the other standard models in there. Yep. It's got a cloak, it's got the pose.
It looks a bit more grand.
Yeah, a bit more grand. Or if you look at my librarian that I've made from Cortez model.
Yeah, Cortez.
With the two, with double-headed eagle on his arm.
Yes.
Again, painted blue, red and blue for a librarian.
Yeah, he's got the blue cape, hasn't he?
Blue cape. He's got like a power sword, but like a...
it's like a halberd kind of thing.
Halberd, short halberd style thing. It's very different, and a little bit of converting with the halberd away from his axe made it look... or Warhammer, sorry. Made it look... different to someone else's Cortez model, who, unless you won't see him anyway because he's an Inquisitor normally. So I think it's not just using models from either Games Workshop, Forge World, third parties to sub them in to bring out that center point model, the center model in your army. I don't necessarily think single models like a HQ model.
Yes, I'm talking about a HQ model here, or a character model.
So my Pask is a Death Corps of Krieg.
Yeah, he would count as this. Yeah, I don't just mean like your Dread Knight.
Yeah.
Because they're quite imposing as they are, and you can make a few bitters changes to poses and things like that. I think that's, you know, something you could easily do. You know, that Terminator Chaplain could easily be changed by taking that arm off with the Crozium, keeping the Crozium, but adding it to a swinging arm of a Thunderhammer and take the Thunderhammer off.
Yeah.
So then you've got a Chaplain that's swinging their Crozium,
nightstick.
Yeah, rather than just having it out in front of them. Mm. Things like that. So some of the things I've kind of pulled out are basing. I think adapting that base to make them stand out. So for me, I've put all my single characters onto 32mm bases.
Cool.
Because I didn't want to do 25. I didn't want to update all of them to 32mm bases.
Yeah.
And what I found is that single model stands out because it is on that bigger base because it's more of a bigger deal.
Yeah.
So Ragnar Blackmane is on a 32mm base in a squad of 25mm base Grey Hunters, and he really stands out just for that.
Yeah.
Alternative heads and weapons. So this is again with my Ragnar Blackmane, I use the Krom Dragon Gaze model. So going with your kind of Cotier's idea from the Stormclaw box, cut off the axe, used a heavy chainsword to make from Forge World to make Ragnar's like giant chainsword that he has, and switched out Krom's head for a Space Wolf head that has kind of a top knot and is how Ragnar is depicted in the Codex and in the books.
Yeah.
And, you know, just with that head swap and that alternate weapon, keeping exactly the same pose, doing nothing else to the model, really makes him stand out and look, you know, that great hero with a great saga, which is what I was trying to achieve.
Absolutely.
You know, whether those bits are third-party heads, I've used a third-party head on my Orc War Boss. I mean, here's a crazy conversion anyway. If you want to go full ham, you know, that's a bit of a weird saying. That's something that we use around here that, you know, if you want to go full head of steam,
full throttle,
anything like that. You know, I took a Killer Can set of legs, a Demon Prince body, a Cromlech third party Orc War Boss head, Killer Can arms, shoulder pads, bits from Death Dreads, to make my Orc War Boss, who's, you know, completely stands out because he's the size of a Dreadnought, if not a tiny bit taller.
Yeah, yeah.
Rather than, you know, and I use Gazgul Thrakkers as these mega knobs, which are like technically the biggest Orc model available by Games Workshop.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you can do all sorts of crazy stuff, but I think those little slight alternates can really make a difference.
Yeah.
So you don't have to break your back, and if you're worried about your converting skills, and you know, if you're someone like Jacob, was it Jacob who messed up a model in our listener Pain and Joys? Or was it Ben? Ben was Australia, so yeah, it must have been Jacob. Sorry, going back.
Jacob.
Yeah. You know, if you're like him and you're worried about wrecking models and you don't want to do that, switching out a head is just not gluing the head on and choosing a different one. You don't even need to trim on most of the models because the head comes separately. And Games Workshop kits are getting better and better at that.
Yes.
There's a few, like the Scions kit can be quite difficult.
I hate the guns.
Yeah, because it's this arm with that gun.
Yeah.
Things like that can be quite hard. But if they're not that complicated, but give you head swap options and things like that, sometimes you don't even need to do any of this to make them stand out.
Yeah.
But then if you play a popular army, you know, so for me, Ragnar Blackmane was an easy choice because he was still the very old static posed model.
Yeah, same for Sangarini Priest. The amount of times you see Cortez.
Yes.
Cortez?
No, Corbolo.
Corbolo, there we go. Corbolo. Yeah. The amount of times you see him, and like, I've got him like repeated four times in my army, just with one with a jump pack, one on a bike, one on a walking, and another dude randomly sitting in a chair.
Yeah.
Some random thing like that. and it's because the other one, or the new one, is really cool, but the old ones just wasn't there.
Yeah, but I think even with those new ones, you know, Sangreal Priests are kind of a bit more of a HQ thing, so you only have one in your army.
Yeah, I used to have
but four. It's not even about that. You know, if you're part of a club and there's lots of gamers and maybe there's four or five of you that play Blood Angels, everyone having the same Sangreal Priest can get a little bit boring. And if you want to make a difference, you can alter the weapon, you can alter the pose, you can alter the head, you know, you could alter the base. There's little tiny things you can do that don't have that high an extra cost and not that hard to do, and just mean that your model stands out next to the same model.
Yeah.
So again, your Cotiers is a perfect example of that. Cutting off the hammerhead and putting on the halberd from the Grey Knight kit, you know, and I think that's pretty much all you did, wasn't it?
It wasn't the halberd from the Grey Knight kit. It was a Blood Angel power sword stuck on the end.
Oh, okay.
Cut off the hilt and had it on the end. So it looked cool.
But that was it. That was the only difference you made.
Yeah.
But yet you put that model next to five Cotiers who, you know, people have, and he stands out instantly.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you were using him as a separate model, and that's a separate aside, I guess. But you can do very simple things for single models to make them stand out in your own army and against other people's armies of the same type.
Yeah.
Just, you know, have a think before you do it, and you could make that model really stand out.
So what about units in an army?
Yeah, units in an army. So for me, I think squad markings is the easiest way. Thinking of your Grey Knights.
Yep.
Yeah. So you've done single stripes on their
heads. On their helms, yeah. So red, different colours basically to pick. Different colours to pick different squads. So you have like red, green, double blue, yellow. So yeah, the way I've done it is basically for me to see which is in which squad, because they're all painted the same colour.
And for my Space Horse, I'm painting the different shoulder pad patterns.
Okay.
So like there's like lightning bolts or half red, half yellow, and the next one is like three lightning bolts, and one is a circle, the other one's a paw print. like lots of different signs to separate my squads.
Yeah.
So even though I've got five Bloodclaw squads, I know exactly who's from what squad. It's actually really useful for when you're putting away your army as well.
Yeah.
And when things die. So if four Bloodclaws have died from one squad and three from another, I know where they go in my cases.
Yeah.
That's a bit OCD and a bit irrelevant. But it's a nice extra.
Yeah.
It's a nice extra if you're as crazy as me.
Yeah.
Squad markings is like the simplest way of making a unit stand out against another unit of the same type.
Yeah.
I've written down Blood Effect.
Yep.
So Games Workshop brought out those technical paints recently, ages ago.
Yeah,
we covered them in like episode 5. Something like that,
quite a while now.
One of them is Blood for the Blood God and a Blood Effect, and it's a really good paint I've found, and I've used it on my elitist units. So for my orcs, my meganobs have got it all over their power claws and sprayed up their faces. I've done it on my blood claws, so separate my blood claws from my grey hunters.
Yeah.
So that's like on multiple units, but helps separate them between units that are very similar. Because, grey hunters and blood claws pretty much look alike.
Yeah.
And having that blood effect on the units that would be getting into combat, that are maybe your combat specialists, really make that unit stand out. Because you get this technique and this paint that isn't on any other units, or isn't on any other units of a different type that look the same, if you follow me. I found that a really useful way of separating my units between them, one for my own sake on the battlefield, so I know that's a Bloodclaw squad and that's a Grey Hunter squad. But also just to say these guys are kick butt in close combat because they've got blood all over them.
Yeah.
And that message does subliminally get across to your opponent, who sees those models that look awesome and are covered in blood and like, oh no, they're going to kill my units. I found that a really cool way.
Oh, cool. So I've looked at mainly bigger units. Obviously my knight is quite a center point of my Imperial Guard army because it is a bigger unit. It's painted to an okay standard, forged world shoulder pads, so it stands out
on your knight, and
obviously compared to the fact that all my other guys painted like a cream color for sand and he's blue.
Yes.
It does stick out.
Yeah, alternate colour schemes, if the background allows it, then brilliant. So, for Space Wolves, they use different colours on their shoulder pads.
Yeah.
So, Games Workshop are already giving you the background of separating your units out, which is good.
I've also talked about upgrades, Bruce. So, obviously, my Death Watch guys that I built originally have different weapons, different faction-related shoulder pads, but they've also got the unifying factor that they've all got the same Death Watch shoulder pad and gun. So it worked out pretty well but for them. Forge World do a load of upgrade sprues, like the Bretonians, like the Catechins, like the army-specific ones. So make your Imperial Guard
slightly different. Yes, Elysians, and Imperial Guard get a lot of those. But, I mean, you can easily use the 30K torsos across into 40K.
Marks of armor.
The other marks of armor, but not even just other marks of armor, just the so for Night Lords, the terror assaults that have the skulls and stuff. If you're making Chaos Marines and you want your Chaos Marines, what they call chosen squad, their veteran squad, stand out to all of the other plastic Chaos Marines you've got, it's £11.50 for 5. If that's a squad of 10, all right, that's £22 on top, £23 on top. But they're going to stand out, look really nice, paint up really well, and you're easily going to be able to spot those guys are special because they've got something extra that the other units in the army don't have. So one of the other things I've got is kind of alternate armor, alternate trophies, weapons, depending on the army's kind of background. So for Dark Elder, they give you a bunch of trophies in the packs, but they're all the same. So I've seen people cut off the top skull, which is a Kroot head, and change it for a normal Tau head, which you don't get on the sprues, or for a Orc head that you don't get on the sprues. So it's just, and actually, when you glance over that force, you wouldn't even notice that. But then when you really look at it and you look at someone else's Dark Elder, or if you've collected Dark Elder yourself, you notice, oh, they've done a slight difference. Wow, they've really gone into depth with their hobby. And I think, that's like a really... If someone goes over your army and doesn't see the conversion you've done, I think that proves that you've converted a model well.
See, I'd disagree with that because sometimes conversions are completely out there. So, like having my buggies, the buggies on that are obvious. It's the copters, but that kind of conversion will make a difference because no one else has got those.
Yeah, except if you don't know, you know, that much about orcs and don't really know about those copter units and see them and they look like they should be buggies.
Yeah.
And they go, oh, they're cool buggies. Oh, hang on a minute. You've used the... That's... You've won. You know?
Okay.
And I'm not saying that, you know, my orc war boss, you don't pass over him and just go, oh, he's a normal orc war boss because he looks completely out there.
Yeah.
And I get that. But what I mean is, like, so my Space Wolf rune priests, I've had people I've played... And at the end, they've picked up my rune priest to give back to me at the end of the game, you know, because it's still on the board or whatever, and gone, oh, you've converted his staff. Oh, I didn't notice that.
Mm.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Because actually, that's what I want. I want it to look normal.
Or that poorly
but unique.
That people don't even notice it.
Well, I think you notice poor conversions, though. You do notice poor conversions.
Yeah.
You notice when they're done badly, whereas if, you know, something like a weapon swap is done well and looks natural... It takes a while for you to go, oh, that's a conversion.
Mm.
And I guess we're talking about units standing out, so that's kind of, I guess, an irrelevant point.
Yeah. But, so I talked about the different Leman Russ armor types.
Yeah, okay.
So Forge World produced the different Leman Russ armor types specifically for, say, Death Corps of Krieg, the Mars pattern.
Yeah, different, different patterns.
So slightly different turret shapes, different lean backs. We talked about it the other episode in... for the Super Size Me episode.
Yes, the different types of Baneblade.
Where you could easily go in and equip a different type of Baneblade that people don't necessarily use by being conversion work. And it would be a awesome center point to go, you know what, I've got this massive Baneblade sort of sticking in the middle of my force. What about army-wide ideas?
Yeah, I think we're at a point there. Just to say again, that third-party units kind of look a bit weird. So, so you know, if you have five Grey Hunter squads and then your sixth Grey Hunter squad is Anvil Industry Infantry models, like what are they called, Spec Ops or whatever you use for your Inquisitor, it would look really weird.
Yeah.
I think that's something that you can do in army-wide that you can't do in specific units. But third-party parts, like alternate heads, alternate weapons, alternate trophies, like I already mentioned... work really well if you're trying to make that squad stand out, whether they're one of your elite squads or whether it's just because that's the one your HQ goes with, so you want them to stand out a little bit different. There's easily ways of doing that, like you say, upgrade screws from Games Workshop, Forge World and third party vendors. But full kits I think look a bit weird if you're not using them across the army.
So
which leads quite nicely into army wide
like my Inquisition stuff.
Yeah,
the majority of the force is third-party Anvil Industries, but you've got some 40k in there, but the 40k stuff doesn't look out of place because they are on the same bases, the same style.
Yes, and you can tie them in very well because the majority of the army is that alternate, and you don't have the same style. So your Bulgrins are on different bases, are much different models, you know, in size and everything, so it doesn't look weird. Whereas if you were doing an Inquisition force with your Acolytes and you were using... your Anvil Infantry is one squad and the other squad were Imperial Guard, it would look really odd. Whereas using the vehicles and the different types of units really work. But army-wide ideas.
So I talked about basing. So Tom, Deathwatch Tom's a perfect example of this because his Marines are all on like rock bases and snow. So his Marines are actually taller than every other Marine I've seen. Only by a little bit. But the majority, his entire army are on the similar tile base, which gives them an extra, even if it's like quarter inch, still makes them look taller. They look a bit more like True Scale Marines. I thought he actually converted them into True Scale Marines.
Yeah. I mean, basing is something I've got written down, you know, to add that theme to your army, to add that idea behind what they're doing, whether they're fighting in urban or desert or whatever. I think, you know, you can get some really great base packs. So I think Carl, for his 30k word bearers, had some secret weapon miniature bases that were like deserty with like these weird soul faces coming out of the sand.
Yeah.
Like very demonic and evil. And he painted them really cool. And that was the theme across the board. You know, these guys were not altered in any way. But yet, when he put them down next to another word bearer force, painted very similar style, very similar ability, they still stood out.
Do you find that you're locked in with 30k to a specific 40k is fantastic at being, you can create your own fluff and you can create your own armies. With 30k, do you feel you're locked into specific army styles and paint jobs?
Because you have legion colours,
there's only the legions. There's no second founding. You can go and make up your own legion.
Yeah,
I suppose you can go always. You could always go in for the third for the legion that's been lost and create those.
You could, but I don't. No, they don't want you to do that. I think the thing, Heresy gaming is very different to 40k. It's historical. It's future historical. Future historical. That's what it is, and I think that's why it has a real strength. For that, for those that love the background and stuff, they love that. But making your 40k model stand out, you can do some crazy stuff.
Yeah, you can have your Hello Kitty Marines or
Well, I guess the thing about the basing, going back to that, keeping us on track before we go off into Hello Kitty Marines, is that, you know, so you can't adapt the armor or the paint job that much. Mm. You know, switch out heads that don't make sense and all this kind of stuff. Mm. So basing's a really simple way. You buy those third-party bases, you spend that bit extra money, and it goes that extra mile.
Yeah.
It does make your army stand out. You know, and that's a very simple thing that you can do. Mm. You know, another thing, like we've already mentioned, is all alternative models. Mm. You know, using a third-party model and using 40k rules on it, as long as you're not playing in a Games Workshop tournament, no problem.
Yeah.
You know, and they look awesome, and your Anvil Industry acolytes look amazing. They really do, like, not just because of the paint job that you've given them, but the fact that just the fact that they look right for that role. You know, they're in kind of power armor but look lighter and smaller than Marines, and they fit really well. If you do your research and look into the stuff before you buy it, you don't make mistakes, and you can end up with units that really stand out on the field. I mean, one of the things I mentioned that you brought up about Heresy being a, or potentially a weakness if you wanted to, having an interesting colour scheme. Mm. And I've kind of put in brackets, if the fluff allows it. So I find it weird that, you know, I want to do Space Wars to make them look different, so I'm going to paint them purple.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, all right, but they're Space Wars.
Yeah.
You know, I suppose in some ways I've got to be careful, because you've done that with your Grey Knights.
Yeah.
You know, you've painted them purple. But the whole idea behind that was that you were almost creating a wing of the Ordo Xenos.
Yeah, yeah.
So you wanted them to not look like Grey Knights, because they weren't Grey Knights. They're Ordo Xenos Marines.
Yeah.
They're not Death Watch, but they're Ordo Xenos Marines.
To that's, kill orcs.
Yeah, and that's probably where you could add the Death Watch.
Orcs blood are black. It's purple.
Oh, yeah, yeah, so they're just covered from head
covered
to toe.
In all blood.
Yeah, yeah, from our last game, probably.
We bathe in the blood.
Of Battle Sisters.
Of Battle Sisters.
Sorry, Matt Ward Codex moment there. But yeah, I think, you know, if the fluff allows it, paint that alternate colour scheme to make your models stand out. Do something interesting. So for Blood Angels, I'd always love the idea, other than the fact that it's white, doing the angels in Carmine.
No, they're white.
Which, yeah, yeah, you know what I mean. But you don't see them that often, probably because of that.
Yeah.
And it would be really awesome to play play them. I don't think it's even... Is it even them? I think it's one of them where their Death Company are white.
Yeah.
Where they're, you know, they're still red-armoured and look very similar, but they use white for their Death Watch.
Mm,
Death Watch, Death Company. And I find that a really cool concept as well.
No.
Well, just because you don't see it, it would really stand out on the table next to, you know, if you put your force out and I put my force out, they could have exactly the same units and look like completely two different armies.
Yeah.
I think that's a really awesome thing. You know, if you like the background and aren't that bothered about either difficulty of technique for that color, or you just, you know, you're not that worried about whether they're first company or second company or whatever successor chapter, choosing the one that's least popular potentially is some way of making your army stand out, as long as you can do it justice.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want it standing out for the wrong reasons, like you, it's a bad paint job.
Yeah, yeah.
You just want something that looks a bit different.
If I painted mine white, they would be a bad
paint job. Yeah, yeah. I always liked that idea. And if I ever did Blood Angels, which I don't think I ever will, but I would probably go that way for that reason, just for the fact that you'd have white Death Company running around and you never see it.
No.
But yeah. Any other thoughts on army-wide ideas?
No.
Okay. Well, the only thing that I have is kind of, you know, using your key models and units to be that eye-catching for your army.
Yeah.
So you don't, you know, to make your army stand out can be the things that we've already talked about, single models, units. You don't have to make every single model stand out for it to be a standout army. You know, you have that centerpiece. So for your guard, again, they're all painted very well, but there are a lot of Lima Rust type chassis. Mm. They don't stand out crazily different between each other.
Yeah.
But you put that bang off Blue Knight there and the alternate PASC model that you have for, you know, sticking out the top of your Punisher tank and your quartermaster who's leading a squad of veterans, you know, and your one Hellhound. Yeah. And suddenly those pieces that are a little bit different to everything else really make a model, an army stand out.
Yeah.
And, you know, so when we're talking about army wide, you shouldn't be like, oh man, I don't, you know, I want to make my army stand out, but I don't think I can redo all of these people or even, you know, put go that extra mile on every single model.
Yeah.
You don't have to. You know, you can make an army stand out by those individual models, by those special characters, those HQs, those knights, those centerpiece big models, which we see more and more in 40K. You know, just be smart with it. And the only last thing to talk about is I thought about display boards.
Okay.
So, you know, when you get the kind of, again, Adepticon's a good highlight to this. You know, you have a competition and part of that is your army display.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think they have it at Games Workshop as well in their tournaments, don't they? Or is it Best Army List?
Oh, I don't know.
I think it's Best Army List. But anyway, you know, having a display board where you can display your models and make them stand out in that way, I think it's a really cool thing if it's the right occasion.
Yeah.
So one of the things I thought of, I'm definitely not going to do it for because of the extra time, money, and I don't think I could do it justice, is displaying my models in my hobby space on display boards.
Yeah.
You know, I think actually having them in a glass cabinet or some kind of cabinet that's covered where they can, you know, stand and you can see them and look at them, but they're much easier to access. I think that's the idea behind what I want
to
do.
Get a couple of trays to take them out.
But there's nothing saying that you couldn't put shelving in that was the right size for those, you know, one-by-one tiles that you get from Secret Weapon.
Yeah.
You know, their kind of version of Realm of Battle Boards, or even Realm of Battle Board tiles if you wanted to go the whole hog and had a bigger army, and paint them up really nice and put your models on to match and put some buildings, ruins, you know, really go to town with it, you know, girders everywhere and have, you know, scouts hiding in buildings and all this kind of stuff. And it would make your army stand out 100%. And then when you take it out, you have your game with it and then it goes back into its eye-catching display.
Yeah.
If that's the way you are, that's a great way of making your army stand out to someone else's, because that's a real creative thing and always going to be quite personal. Mm. Whereas, you know, a unit is always going to be that unit. There's ways of making your sniper scouts stand out to my sniper scouts, but they're always both sniper scouts. Whereas mine could be hiding in a tree and your guys could be up in a building.
My guys are probably chilling on a rock.
Yeah.
Getting that 2+ cover save.
Yeah, she takes her rock everywhere. Going back to a title of a previous episode. But yeah, I think we've kind of talked that to death, really.
Cool.
There's more, you know, we didn't want to go into ways of making your army, so, you know, the practical ways like magnetization and this is how you convert a model, and, you know, we didn't want to go into the practical areas of that. We just wanted to go through the ideas so that you guys might, you know, something might spark and go, oh yeah, I didn't think about switching that head out or switching that weapon or painting squad markings on their helmets or whatever. So hopefully you found that inspiring. Hopefully that helped you if you're struggling with how to make your army stand out. Maybe you're not bothered at all, but hey, some of us want to make our models stand out that little bit to everyone else's. Not because they have to, but because it's a fun part of the hobby.
Some people like converting more than they like playing.
Yeah, some people are hobbyists, and you can tell that when you look at their armies.
Yeah.
You know, I'm definitely not that guy. My basing is very simple, you know, just to complete the model and tie them into my snowboards. But it's nowhere near a level of someone else who's really trying to make their models stand out. And I really admire them for it. But yeah, like I said, lots of ideas. Hope some of them grabbed you. Let us know what you've done, if we missed anything, and show us the results as well. We want to see your converted models, see your models that stand out, see your whole armies. Post it on our page. Post it on our Facebook page. We'll get back to you. We'll comment. Other people will love it. It'll be awesome.
Right, that's getting too excited. Listen.
Yeah, I am. I'm getting excited. I'm jumping up and down in my chair. but we'll take a quick break, come back with our final thoughts, and give us your goodbyes. No, that made no sense. Hey guys, Matt from the Adeptus Terra podcast here. Just want to take this moment and advertise our Facebook page with you. If you want to get involved and share your thoughts and your feelings about this podcast, about what you'd like to see, or even share some of the stuff you're up to, we love seeing your hobby progress. Go to www.facebook.com/ the Adeptus Terra podcast, and we'll see you there. We're back. Yay, after my nonsense ending to that segment.
That's fine. Matt gets a little too excited sometimes. I think it does happen. Himself to the toilet and pull himself out.
Yeah, it does happen. Got a new set of trousers on. I'm all good.
Oh, so grim.
Yeah, not true, by the way. But anyway.
He hasn't got a new set of trousers.
We're here. Yeah, I'm just sitting in it. anyway, this is our final thoughts before we say our goodbyes. And goodbye to 2015, this will be.
Yes.
It's been a cool episode, much shorter than our last one, which is nice. Still lots of content. Still lots of content, which I'm glad about. But yeah, we kind of overstretched ourselves a little bit with the Death Watch.
I think we did it justice.
We did it okay.
But you are right. It was a lot of episode to edit.
Yes. Yeah. No, it's cool to have something a bit more
chilled.
Like normal, maybe, is potentially the right word. I don't know, we just make this up as we go along, really.
Yeah, whatever subject.
We're under no illusion that we have any clue how to do this. We're just here rambling and you guys are listening and you're awesome for it. But yeah, it's really cool. Looking forward to 2016.
Yep.
Looking at that year kind of commitments, thinking about that over Christmas will be really good. Getting all that hobby stuff done.
30k.
Yeah. Moving into 30k as well, which will be awesome. And yeah, just thinking about that timeline and how that'll work and how long that might take. The 40K League.
Oh, yes.
That's going to be really cool. Just giving some purpose to our games and our gaming group getting together. Kind of definitely going to have one game a month because you have to meet the league requirements.
Yeah.
So that's going to be good. Yeah, really exciting stuff. Enjoyed doing a Primark. That was cool. Covering a Primark. Don't look at me that way.
I didn't make any joke about you doing
Primark. I saw your eyes.
It was cool to learn about a new Primark that I've never really been to before.
It was cool. I like the White Scars. They're one of those loyalists that I would maybe think about after the Night Lords if no one else wanted to do them.
Come!
Yeah, just to scream that.
When I lose, but come!
Come! but yeah, so that was really cool, just covering the White Scars and looking at their background of their Primarch and his journey through the heresy, trying to work out the truth of things, being manipulated a bit and all that craziness with the Alpha Legion and whose side are they really on. All that kind of was really cool. And just talking about models standing out as well, like just going through the episode in my head. Like, you know, I've done that quite a lot throughout my hobby, making models stand out, make units stand out in very minimal ways. And I could always do that better. So it's always good to think about ideas of how to do things and get that inspiration, and hopefully it inspired you. I mean, this is it. This is the 2015 episode.
2015, zipping it up.
Yeah.
Closing those trousers and moving on.
Yeah, we will be recording in 2016 after this episode.
In the future.
Yeah.
So I'm just looking forward to next year, kind of the league, kind of more structured game, getting more games in. Finishing my Blood Angels, that's definitely going to happen next year.
Spoilers for next year's commitments.
Then 30K.
Yeah, that'll be cool. And orcs thrown in there in between. It's a busy year. Getting your new house, getting your hobby space.
Getting a gaming room. Oh, my life sucks. Yeah,
it's going to be awesome. It's going to be awesome. It's pain and joy at the same time.
I can't wait to have a hobby room before you have your hobby room.
Yeah, I'll be upset. Well, that's one of my challenges for January, to at least have it ready and only 40K in there. So, yeah, we'll see.
It'll be an empty room.
But, yeah, I guess there's only a couple of things left to say. Firstly, Merry Christmas.
Emperormas.
Yeah, and have an awesome new year. I've been Matt.
And I've been Sam.
And this is the Adeptus Terra podcast. See you in 2016.
See you in 2016.
And make yourself sound really awesome.
Yeah, I'm gonna sound so good.
No.
Paladin.
How did it?
Oh.
Do you want to finish?
I was coming, so I wanted to quickly get to the end of my game. So at least that was fine. I was like, yeah, yeah, we'll go to Sam.
Go outside.
I'm good now. Oh, my shoulder hurts. You know when you cough so hard, your shoulder hurts.
You good now?
I am right now. We'll see. No.
So it's... it's whenever I talk about nights.
Yeah, I'm allergic to nights.
With women.
Don't edit that out to sound bad. Anyway, sorry, my shield to my microphone just hit me in the face. Brilliant. I can't remember where we were. That was like the perfect bit for another comment to come in.